Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to the Sunday afternoon edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, and I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia. I'm being broadcast through People's Internet Radio, ShakeAndWakeRadio.com, and the Truth Be Told Radio Networks. I always start the shows off, guys, with a little plug for the stations. We are viewer-supported, so any money at all that you can throw towards these operations, I know the operators would be much appreciative of that. Even a coffee a month would be much appreciated. So if you can help out, I urge you to do so. I also like to start my shows thanking my producer, Steve, for what he does for me every week and putting up with me. And I would be lost without the man. So thanks, Steve, for what you're doing. It's always a pleasure to have my guest on for the next hour, who is Dr. David Allen. Anybody that's listened to my shows over the year has heard the doctor talk many times. And I'm also, guys, going to apologize for my voice today. For some reason, it is very, very strained, and I'm having a very difficult time getting my words out. So please bear with me. Welcome to the show, Doctor. Always great to have you on, my friend.
Thank you, Barry. I appreciate you having me on.
Okay, so what we were going to talk about Initiative 77, which you're involved in greatly in Mississippi, correct?
Right. I'm the author of Initiative 77 in Mississippi. And the way it was written was the primary intent to end the drug war. And so there's several important points on how to end the drug war. And we think that if Initiative 77 actually ever goes through, and it may not, we're trying to gather signatures now, if it does ever go through, it will change law in the other states, because this is how cannabis should be regulated, and it avoids some of the pitfalls of semi-legalization that's been done in the other states. So it's my opinion that cannabis is not really legal in any of the states, and Initiative 77 addresses these issues.
Yeah, I've actually read your initiative, Doc, and everything in there is really common sense based. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. Initiative 77, the title of it is The Real Legalization and Decriminalization of Cannabis and Hemp, and the Legalization of Medical and Scientific Study of Cannabis. So the first issue of real legalization is allowing doctors to study cannabis, do clinical trials on cannabis, so they can prove or disprove cannabis's efficacy in treating different diseases. So I predict that cannabis oil will become a revolution in the treatment of burn diseases, because cannabis oil has antibacterial properties, and it sticks to skin. So you could have a burn wound, a small burn wound, and apply a thick cannabis oil on the wound. It would actually stick to the wound and provide antibacterial activity. Currently, they use silver sulfidine, which has silver and sulfa. And it's like Noxzema, and it just kind of wipes off, and it doesn't really stick to the wound. This would be like a candy coating. You could take photographs, serial photographs over a six-month period, and either prove or disprove cannabis's efficacy in the treatment of burns. So I predict that cannabis oil will be the gold standard for treatment of burn wounds in the future. So that's the first thing. So this initiative allows doctors and veterinarians to do clinical trials, and all they have to do is just get a permission, informed consent from the patient, and they can do clinical trials, and the state will publish those trials free on the internet for everybody else to be able to use and benefit from that. So the second issue is we want to end all arrests for cannabis products. And so this initiative would only allow three reasons for arrest. One would be interstate transfer without a license. And that's just a federal law anyway. The second thing would be DWI, DUI with proof of impairment. That differs from DUI from alcohol because they don't have to prove you're impaired. They just have to do it at a level. And as you know, levels don't really have any significant any correlation with performance issues. And I could go into that as well. There's government studies that prove that if you smoke cannabis, the reaction time is actually faster if you use cannabis than if you don't use cannabis. So there's some issues regarding that.
Yeah, no, I read a university study on that exact issue, Doc, and it stated just what you stated, that people that had smoked a little cannabis actually passed the driving test better than people that hadn't. So there's lots to be said that. Go ahead.
That's right. So the third issue that you could be arrested for would be child endangerment if you gave somebody under 18 cannabis without parental consent. And that they would just use the standard child endangerment laws for that. So that'd be the only reason you could be arrested. And a major problem with cannabis is they have quantity limits, or in states that you can grow, then they have plant number limits. And what that does, that whenever you have a limit number, that means you need an army of donut-eating compliance officers to come to your property, and their job is to find you not in compliance. So we don't want a bunch of donut-eating compliance officers on our property. So the issue to solve that is, if you allow all the citizens to grow 99 plants without a license, then there's so much plants that you really don't need to have a compliance officer. And if you grow 100 or more plants, there'd be a graduated license structure that you could get if you wanted to grow 200 plants, and then you would allow somebody to come on your property. So that's an issue. Now, once you have grown the cannabis or hemp, and it becomes money, and people know this but refuse to say it, cannabis and hemp are money. And so if cannabis and hemp are legalized in your state, that means money is going to come to your state, and money can come to your state in one of two fashions. If you allow the citizens to grow cannabis in sufficient quantities, then the money will come to the citizens. They will have extra, they'll have money that they can dispose of. They'll have disposable income that they normally wouldn't have, and they could buy it. It will increase the economy. The other way that cannabis and hemp can come to the state is if you have out-of-state cannabis carpetbaggers come to the state and create vertical integration companies where they grow it, they test it, they process it, they sell it, and they own the whole thing, which is a monopoly or cannabis government-run cartel. So we don't want a cartel started in Mississippi. We want the money and that cannabis and hemp to come to the citizens. Currently, there's a big battle in Mississippi. They had Initiative 65, which was the medical legalization of cannabis. It wasn't a great bill, but it was at least have access for sick people to get cannabis. And 6 months after we voted it in, 74% of people voted it in, the Supreme Court decided that they were smarter than 74% of the people and denied the vote and denied the initiative process, which allows citizens to govern their own laws. So And so when the Supreme Court attacked the initiative process and attacked the vote, they did it on some excuse that not enough numbers were caught in a certain area. It's just a bullshit excuse. But the truth is, once the people vote on it, it becomes law that minute, not 6 months later. That's called ex post facto ruling, a ruling that affects something that happened in the past. And they can't do that. And so the other two branches of the government, the executive branch, which is the governor in this case, and the legislative branches, which is the senators and such, those people are supposed to, they sign oaths to protect the Constitution from anybody that would attack the Constitution. And so, for instance, if the President of the United States, in his executive power, did something to attack the Constitution, the other two branches of the government are supposed to be able to curtail what the president does. And the same thing, if the judicial branch negates the vote, the other two branches of the government should step up and say, wait a minute, you and your judicial ruling have overstepped your bounds. You can't do this. And we declare your judgment null and void. That's what should have happened, but it didn't. So I'm collecting signatures. There's a lot of arguments that people say, well, the initiative process is dead, and so now you're just wasting time collecting signatures. And, you know, I think there is some truth to that, but I don't know what else to do. So some people, they've joined this. We are the 74, which is the people, 74% of the people voted for medical cannabis. And they're asking for a special session from the governor and the senators, which cost money, to start a medical program. And, of course, these senators have different ideas about what legalization entails. And so they're suggesting all kinds of crazy stuff that will generate a bunch of money and increase the price of cannabis. So they're going to have seed-to-sales tracking on plants that you can clone. And so these people don't understand that when you can clone, take a leaf off of a plant and make another plant out of that, it negates the efficacy of the effectiveness of a seed-to-sales tracking. So I consider that Chicago gangsterism, that I want to be the guy that sells everybody these little tags. You've got to pay me 50 cents for each one of these tags, and I'm going to put video cameras in your grow and act like I'm doing something. When we all know that it's wasted energy and wasted time, and it's just another bureaucracy created
to generate money for them.
Idiocracy in its finest form.
It is. Well, you know what, Doc? When they legalized it here in Canada, everybody was going yahoo, 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 and they thought it was great. But what we have now in Canada, we have 47 laws that can put you in jail as opposed to 7 prior to the legalization in Canada. You know, in Canada now, believe this or not, in the Liberal government's rules they laid out with the legalization of cannabis, that if you give a person under the age of 14 years of age a joint, that you can go to jail in Canada. That's one of the laws
go ahead. I understand that law, actually, because some people don't want their kids exposed to cannabis, and here it's 18 years or younger. And so if you give somebody, a 17-year-old kid, a joint, that would actually be breaking the law. But, you know, and I have double feelings about that. People that don't want to use marijuana have the right not to use it. And their kids, they have the right to decide what their kids are not to use until they get of age. So I have ambivalent feelings about that. One thing I know is If you create any loophole, the judicial process will use that to put people in jail for a flower crime and act like they're justified in doing it. So,
right. I'm not saying it's you know, the thing to do is to, you know, go promote it on your children. I'm just making a point that if you do give your child that age, that you can go to jail in Canada. It's just one of the laws they brought in when they legalized it.
If it's your child, then you should be able to decide that, you know, I got my kid has seizures or whatever trouble it has. I can give cannabis. I can make the decision if it's legal in the state. Then that means a parent can make the decision to give it to their children if they need it or not. And so some people believe that it should be in the diet, and I believe it should be in the diet of all humans and animals, and will be like a super vitamin that helps regulate your homeostasis. Cannabis is a nutraceutical and metabolic essential. That means that metabolism doesn't occur properly unless you have a proper functioning endocannabinoid signaling system. It regulates everything. So, and one of the most important things that we should know about cannabis is it has major antiviral properties, because it's proven that CBD stops cytokine storms, septic shock, and disseminated intravascular coagulation, DIC. So CBD stops the process that the viruses are killing people by. So there's so much misinformation about the viruses, and I want to talk about that a little bit. I saw a blurb on the news the other day that citizens were calling into the medical community in Kansas, I believe it was, and they were complaining that some doctors were giving recommendations, false information recommendations about virus stuff, and they weren't they didn't have a viral degree. You know, they weren't virologists.
Right.
So the newscasters presented that, and I thought to myself, well, how many of these citizens that called in that said the doctors were giving misinformation, how many of those were virologists? And the answer is none of them. So just because I'm not a virologist, and I'm a cardiac surgeon, I'm double boarded in general surgery and cardiac surgery, doesn't mean that I am not educated in virus. I don't know everything about viruses, but I have some not basic knowledge. And what I know is this, what's major misinformation is people are not dying from the virus itself. The virus doesn't kill your lung cells, doesn't kill your brain cells. What happens is the virus starts a immune reaction, and the immune reaction becomes a hyperimmune reaction. It's overreactive, and when it becomes overreactive, it sets off a cascade of troubles, including septic shock, disseminated intravascular coagulation, and a bunch of other stuff. And what happens is when the viral protein is identified by antibodies, then it creates this cytokine storm. All the white cells bust open that are in the immediate area, and they release their enzymes, their proteolytic enzymes. They're designed to dissolve or digest any foreign protein. So they dissolve bacteria and viruses. And they also signal, it's a signaling molecule that signals other white cells in the area. If they have these antibodies, they in turn bust open. So one bust open causes 100 to bust open, causes 1 million to bust open. And it's just like a nuclear reaction. So that's why they call it a cytokine storm. And all of a sudden, you got all of these enzymes floating around in your bloodstream, and that causes disseminated intravascular coagulation, or DIC. And what that is your platelets start clumping up, and coagulating. And so the platelets end up blocking off all the capillaries in your brain, lungs, liver, kidneys, and everywhere else. And so you get this septic shock syndrome. Your blood pressure drops, and you can't really resuscitate these people because all their end vessels are plugged up, and so the blood doesn't really have anywhere to go. And so this hyperimmune reaction is stabilized, is reduced by CBD. And so cannabis can save people that are in DIC and septic shock caused by the viral proteins that are in your blood system. So if you can stop the sequelae, if you stop the blood clotting, then you can have a better outcome. So I recommend all patients should take the following. They should take zinc every day. They should take vitamin D every day. They should take a baby aspirin every day for the platelet clots. They should take CBD, and they should take N-acetylcysteine, and they should be on a low-carbohydrate ketogenic diet. And what that does is the less sugar that's in your body, the less rapid replication of either virus or bacteria. So you can, like, starve the virus or the bacteria by reducing the sugar that's available for the virus to replicate. So it's harder for bacteria or virus to use fat as a substrate. So if you turn the body to fat burning, it should have a better end result for viral infections. So avoid alcohol, avoid sugars and starches.
Well, you know, I'm not a doctor, you know that, but I've listened to a lot of doctors talk here in the last couple of months about this whole scamdemic, and that's what I call it. I call it a scamdemic going on in our society. I've listened to some of the top neurologists in the world describe what they think about this situation, and I'm quite honest, I can't retain and repeat that information, but I'm getting a lot of different reports from a lot of different places. I do know that even in my little community here in northern British Columbia, that people on the reserves, especially the elders who have been given the Pfizer vaccine, a large amount of them seem to be passing away lately, and that none of this is being reported on the mainstream media. I'm looking at numbers from around the world, but one of the reports I read here in the last couple of weeks came from Israel, where they stated that 78 to 84% of the new Delta variant that were breaking out in that country were from people that had already received two vaccinations. What are your thoughts on that? I've seen reports like this before. I'll let you add to that. I want you to talk on this, Doc. But I've seen those same reports from multiple countries now where it seems like the vaccinated people are the ones that are getting the new variants and the unvaccinated aren't. And, you know, that's a really kind of a deep rabbit hole, but this is what I'm seeing. And I've kind of checked the sources of the information. And as far as I'm concerned, I can see it's all valid. So I'd like you to speak on that for a minute.
Well, all the vaccine manufacturers, and there's a bunch of them, say that their vaccines are not 100% effective. And they say that they reduce deaths and they reduce complications from the virus. And that may or may not be true, but they're saying actually that it's only 66% effective in some instance in some of these different vaccine manufacturers, and that's barely over a coin toss, 50% effective. They have stated that it doesn't prevent reinfection. And it doesn't prevent transmission.
Right.
So it just reduces their symptoms, maybe. And so these could be, like they call, super spreaders. And so I don't know. I'm not taking the vaccine myself. My girlfriend took the vaccine and had the immunoglobulin. and we both got COVID. And I knew I had COVID, although I didn't test for it, because I lost my smell. And I had a viral syndrome for a couple of days. I recovered from it much better than she did with her vaccination. So I know this is only just one or two people, but any government that lies about marijuana can't be trusted on any other level.
Exactly.
And so, exactly. I've never trusted the pharmaceutical industry. I believe the pharmaceutical industry is in many ways corrupt. And I used to do pneumonectomies in my hospital, and I did more pneumonectomies than all the other surgeons at the hospital combined.
What is that?
And I would take, that's where you take out the whole lung.
Okay.
And sometimes the lung would be stuck to the ribs, and I'd have to take out a section of ribs attached to the tumor even. So these are like big operations. And I would have to present these cases before the oncologist, and there was a whole room full of these people, and we would go over the case, and I would say what I did, and they would come in and talk about all their chemotherapeutic agents, which are sold by the oncologist. They're not sold in pharmacies. So when you buy cisplatinum or something, you're buying it from the oncologist, not from a pharmacist. And so these guys have monetary interest in selling anything that has a name on it that's FDA approved, regardless right. of whether it works or not. And some of these guys were saying that they had a 30% response rate. And response rate is just like if it slows down anything. And so that a 30% response rate in any drug is a poison, in my opinion, and not a drug. If it doesn't increase stuff better than 50%, it's a poison. And so I don't believe in pharmacies. I don't believe in oncologists. And cannabis is going to revolutionize medicine because it kills cancer by five mechanisms. It kills cancer. The first mechanism, it stops replication because it switches from glucose burning to fat burning. So it slows down cannabis or cancer cells replicating and making more cancer cells. The right. second thing is it stops metastasis from one area to another area. So it prevents the cancer from eating through what's called the basement membrane and metastasizing to other parts of the body. The third way is it decreases vascular endothelial growth factor, VEGF, V-E-G-F. And what VEGF is, it's a signaling protein that the body makes. And what it does is whenever you have low blood oxygen in the area, the cells can actually secrete this VEGF. And it's a signaling molecule that signals more vasculature to grow into that area. And some, like brain tumors and other tumors, have learned that if they secrete this VEGF stuff, that it can cause blood vessels to grow into the tumor, and the tumor can gain in size by this increased blood flow. So cannabis oil stops vascular endothelial growth factor. And the fourth mechanism is cannabis induces apoptosis in cancer cells. So cancer cells have developed a way to avoid what's called apoptosis. And apoptosis is the natural death of cells after a cell is replicated so many times, after a mother cell has produced a bunch of daughter cells. After the DNA is read a certain number of times, there's more chances for error and causing tumor formation and stuff. So God made it to where the DNA is read so many times that at the end of that, what happens is the cell auto-destructs and lets all the daughter cells take over the function. So the mother cell, after reproducing so many times, enzymatically kills itself, and it's all dissolved. And so that's the programmed death, natural death of a normal cell. Well, cancer right. cells have been able to avoid that somehow by some mechanism. We don't really know why. But cannabis induces apoptosis in cancer cells. So most chemotherapeutics have one, no, all chemotherapeutics have one mechanism of action. But cannabis has four mechanisms of action to kill cancer cells. So that's why cannabis works so well on so many different kinds of cancers. Now, there are some cancers that are resistant to even CBD oil, but we're not sure exactly which of these cancers, and it probably has to do with metabolism. So some cancers are slower growing and would be harder to kill by some of these mechanisms.
Well, all I know is it works, Doc, because I had a friend here in Terrace that the medical profession sent him home, told him he had 4 to 5 weeks to live and to make ready for his death. Buddy was saturated with cancer, and we got him on massive dosages. I mean, hammerful dosages right off the bat. Of really good CBD oil drenched with THC, and Larry Talon, this is his name, I've had permission to use it, lived for another 5 years. And what got him in the end was the fact that he'd had chemotherapy about 7 times in his life, and he died from pneumonia. But his cancer went into full remission, Doc. So, you know, all the stuff that you talk about, I love having you on here because I will never be able to repeat and retain all the information that's in your mind about this stuff. But I do know that it works, and I've seen it with my own eyes. And that's just one example of about 4 I give you in this little town of Terrace right now where people have seen incredible results. So, like I said, I'll never be able to retain the information you have, but I know it works, so. Keep going because it works.
So we're hoping that other people in other states read this initiative and understand how once this happens in one state, it's going to spread like wildfire, because these states that have seed to sales tracking, and a lot of them have that, they will finally understand that it's a bureaucratic job that doesn't make you any safer. We don't need a bunch of garden police. And another thing I want to talk about real quickly, if I could, is how semi-legalization is causing other people to lose their property and get thrown in jail. Where cannabis is semi-legal, and here's how it's done. So if you make cannabis semi-legal, what happens is the drug task force are pretty much not involved in cannabis anymore. And so the police are pretty much not involved because you can't get a case through the courts. So what happens is the drug war isn't going to give up. And so they want to change the drug war. And so they have... People in California have these code enforcement officers, which are not police. They come on your property. They fly drones over your property. They don't have to have a warrant because they're not police. And they take pictures or whatever, and then they charge you with abatement fines that go against your property taxes. So... what happens is they send you a letter, you get $1,000 a day abatement fine, and it goes against your taxes. And then eventually you go to court, but not in court, you go to code enforcement building. They hire a lawyer, they call him the code enforcement hearing officer. They have 2 garden police testify against you, the code enforcement officers. and you don't get it a lawyer because it's a civil matter, it's not criminal. So you don't get appointed lawyer, and you don't get a jury. So by doing this, see, the drug war rests on two legs. The first leg of the drug war is the CSA classification. Cannabis is Schedule One of no medical use in the United States and not safe under doctor supervision. And the second is they got to convict you, which means they have to have 12 jurors, not 11, say guilty. So they're having a hard time finding 12 people to say guilty for a flower crime. Mm. So they got to remove the juror from the decision process. And the way they do that is make a cannabis semi-legal. It's a civil matter, and they can still take your property.
Right.
So we don't want that to occur in Mississippi. And that's where the senators want this to go that way, of course, because they want to continue the drug war. They're making bank on all kinds of drug war craziness. And we want to stop these donut-eating compliance officers from coming on our property. So the last part of Initiative 77, which is important, is there's going to be a cannabis clearinghouse. If you can sell your cannabis, you can trade your cannabis or hemp with no taxes if you just trade it for services. So anything you trade is not taxed. You can sell it yourself, but you have to pay a 7% tax, or you can send it to this cannabis clearinghouse. What they do is they test the product, they market it, they charge 1% for the transaction. They give a state a 7% check, and they send you a check for the balance. So this makes cannabis money. It's a new economy. We used to have an oil economy and then gold economy and all this other stuff. It's going to be a cannabis economy in the future because cannabis is universal money. It always has been. And another important thing to understand is back in 1970, you could buy a four-finger lid with about an ounce and a half for $10. It was universal money. So the price of cannabis is fluctuating with the supply and demand. And if you can create these vertical integration things, then you control the supply, and therefore you can maintain $400 an ounce prices. And that's what they want to do. If they could get $600 an ounce from you, that they would do that as well. They could care less whether your daughter's having seizures or not and whether you could afford that or not, or whether you could grow it in your own backyard or not, treat your own daughter. They can care less about that. Their interest is the money that it generates, and they know it that cannabis and hemp are money, but they refuse to say it.
Mm. Well, everything about your initiative, to me, Doctor, sounds like giving the people back the power and taking it away from these evil people that are standing in our way. Everything about your initiative seems to be pointing in that direction, and that I applaud, because that's what we need to do.
No lawyers were involved in the writing of Initiative 77, I'm proud to say. Because they don't think right. They don't think outside the box. They only think the way they were trained, and they were trained wrong.
You know, we talk about the medical use of cannabis, Doctor, but, you know, the other side of the story is just as important when it comes to cannabis, and that's the industrial use of cannabis and what that could do along with the medical use to absolutely, you know, envision this, folks, that we could literally all these pollutants. We know that they've been spraying stuff in our skies for years. We know that, you know, there's glyphosate in our soil. There's been all kinds of chemicals that the earth has been exposed to over the last 30, 40 years that aren't productive to human health. We could eliminate that, literally eliminate all those chemicals off this planet. All we need to do is take a couple of big airplanes, fill them full of millions of seeds and spray them over the planet and watch what happens to that soil in a couple of years. The amazing effects of industrial cannabis. Doc, I look at the medical use and I look at the industrial use. And to me, it's a 50-50 coin flip because both are very, very important right now. Looking forward to human health on the planet. You talk about feeding our animals cannabis. Well, can you imagine what kind of food we'd be putting in our body if they were fed feral hemp? Just imagine. I mean, our bodies would be super machines. It would put Big Pharma out of business. And that's the bottom line as far as I'm concerned, Doc. Every pushback that you are experiencing, that we all experience, trying to get this information to the public, trying to make the world aware that inducing cannabis into our society could actually just make our society such a great place in a generation. Absolutely. If we embraced it, what it would do to this world in one generation would just astound people. Our health would be what it should be, that, you know, Big Pharma would be a thing of the past. But like I said, Doc, everything that you see as pushback, everything that I see in pushbacks, anybody that's trying to get the word out about this is all coming from people that are very evil and have pockets full of money and they don't want to lose it. Go ahead.
Exactly. Well, I got a prediction for you. Currently, the government spends zillions of dollars, who knows how much it is, on mowing the highway. They mow grass. I predict in the future what will happen is the government will deliberately plant hemp on the highways, and they'll harvest the hemp and create money with what is on the highway rather than waste money for gas, and that it will be almost impossible to grow outdoor plants that don't get fertilized with hemp, and so the citizens will be forced to grow inside under HEPA filters. That's a prediction that I have.
Well, nothing would surprise me when it comes to these people. Nothing would surprise me. Yeah. They see the shift coming in society, Doc. They're not stupid. They're going to do everything they can to make sure that we don't have free access. They're very evil. They're stupidly evil, evilly stupid people. But, you know, to hold this back from society, I think we talked once on the show here about 3 or 4 years ago about the amount of universities that are actually touching on the endocannabinoid signaling system in the human body. I think you told me at that point it was like 13% of the universities. Is that correct?
That's right.
Changed?
My study's not been redone, and it needs to be redone. My study was, we called 157 medical colleges in the United States.
Right.
And asked the director of the curriculum if they had a department of the endocannabinoid signaling system with a director, if they taught the ECS as an organized course, or if they even mentioned it in other courses, ancillary courses like pathophysiology, neuroanatomy, or pharmacology. And the answer was only 13% even mentioned it. Nobody had organized courses. So
right.
After I did that study, that was about 8 years ago, we sent all the medical schools a copy of the results. And you should read this. It's in Cannabis Digest. It's called Ignorance is Not Bliss. That's the name of the article. And it's really a funny article because when I first started calling the medical schools, I'd say, oh, do you have a director of the curriculum? Yeah, what do you want? I want to talk to him about the ECS. Who is this? Well, this is Dr. Allen. And so I got a lot of negative. They wouldn't even call me back and stuff. So we tricked them, and I had some employees call and say, I'm getting ready to go to medical school, and we're interested in going to different medical schools. Does your school teach the ECS and all these? And so first off, if you're a medical student, there's a joke. What's the difference between a medical student and a dog turd? And the answer is no one goes out of their way to step on a dog turd. So whenever a medical student calls a medical college facility, they're all superior, and they, you know, so we got a bunch of weird answers, you know. Well, why would you call up asking questions like that. If you're asking questions like that, you don't need to come to our college. And and so there was a bunch of really crazy answers, provocative answers, from people that didn't know anything about the ECS or didn't care. And once they found out it was about cannabis, then they like freaked out.
Well, you know, a really good friend of mine said years ago, and he's kind of, I got to hold him responsible for waking me up as far as the effects of cannabis on the human body. And that's Rick Simpson. But he said to me years ago, he said, Barry, if everybody had a jar of really good high grade cannabis oil beside their bed and everybody took a little bit every night before they went to sleep, you would see Big Pharma disappear as a business, virtually disappear in one generation. Yeah. And I believe that too, Doc. I absolutely, you know what? I absolutely believe that with every bit of my being, because my God didn't put something on this planet that wasn't meant to be used by us. And the sooner we really get over the dogma of this being a drug, that this being something detrimental to society, which a lot of people still have that thought in their head. Luckily, not as many as before, but there's still that out there, that the sooner we can really embrace this and put it to work for us. Because boy, could it change this world, my friends. Go ahead, Doc.
Well, the cannabis law is an example, a prime example of there are some laws which are you are duty bound to break because they are laws against humanity. And any cannabis, anti-cannabis law is a law against humanity. And so these people, this is a drug war. And these, and in any war, there's legal killings and there's illegal killings. And so this is a war crime by the people that are making, if you're making money on putting people in prison for a flower crime that has so many benefits and could possibly save people's lives in your own family, you are guilty of a drug war crime. And you should be in jail, not the people with cannabis.
Absolutely. Well, we've just got to educate people, and I praise you for what you're doing, because that's your mission in life now, Doc. You were, like you said, you were a heart surgeon. Oh, that was in California you practiced, correct?
No, I was in Mississippi.
In Mississippi? Okay.
Yeah.
And how long did you actually...
I fled to California. I was a refugee from Mississippi. I was a cannabis... drug war refugee.
They had you on the list, sir. So how long were you actually a heart surgeon, Doc?
For about 20 years.
Cool. Well, you know, anybody that can do that in their life, I praise you, because, you know, that takes a set of very steady hands. And obviously you were a good surgeon, because you told me about your results of people that actually died off the table when you put your hands on them. So, but thanks for getting into cannabis, Doc, because we really need the public to be educated about what can be done with this plant. It has so many answers to all the problems we see in this planet. And, you know, people, I say that to people and they go, you're nuts. But if you look at the big picture, what it can do, like we talk about the industrial use, the medical use, it could revolutionize our world and maybe give us a chance, Doc. I don't know what you think about what I'm just going to say right now, but if we continue to do it to this planet, what we're doing right now, that there's going to come a time in the very near future, I believe she won't support life. I say that not lightly.
I agree with that.
Well, that being said, sir, we could change that. I think it's our duty to get people to understand that it's their duty to start taking care of the mother, because we've been abusing her for so many years now. She's going to get to a point, folks, where she's just going to stop, and then we're really going to have a problem on our hands. We can correct that all right now, Doc, if we embrace this. Go ahead.
I agree with you. It's like a Petri dish. The Petri dish has only so much media in it. And once the bacteria eat up all the media, then there's nothing else to support the bacteria. So
absolutely,
Petri dishes end up killing themselves off, bacterial cultures.
Well, we seem to be committing suicide as a race. We've seemed to completely gotten to a point where we just ignore what we're doing to the planet, yet we're counting on that to be there for our next generation and the generation after them. We kind of got to look ourselves in the mirror and say, how much are we actually responsible for as far as destroying this environment and this planet we live on? I've read a study here just lately on the biosphere. I forget what it was, John Hopkins, and there was another university released a study on the actual biosphere in our planet and its ability to produce food. And, you know, people say, well, what difference does that make? Well, it makes a big difference because our planet's actually going to get to a point here in the near future where we won't be able to sustain growth of plants. That's one of the studies I just read, and I find that alarming, of course. Go ahead, Doc. And my dog just walked in the door. my buddy took my dog. My buddy took my dog out mushroom picking, and he just walked in the door. So if you noise, excuse him. But, yeah, thanks, Dad, for doing that, bud. Anyways, go ahead, Doc. Sorry about that.
Well, so we need help with Initiative 77. So if you can, any listener that's listening to this, please go on Facebook, join Initiative 77 supporters. And if you can't find it, go to David Allen. You find it on my website, my Facebook account. And join that. And then read the initiative and see if you couldn't apply it to your state, because many states allow the citizens to write their own initiative process. You could use this as a template, write in whatever you agree or don't agree with, and submit it to your Secretary of State. And if you get enough signatures on it, then it goes before the vote. And if people vote for it, it takes the politicians out of the loop. It creates law without any of their input. And so, you know, many politicians think that the citizens are too stupid to create law that is constitutional. And I believe they're just saying that because they're making money and they don't want the citizens to piss in the punch bowl. So I think that the less that the politicians are involved in writing law, the better the law would be, actually.
I agree with you 100%.
They're trained to think inside the box, total control, and the less control you have, the more the... If people were allowed to grow 99 plants, not everybody would grow that many, but if they were allowed to do that, it would bring down the price of cannabis. It would create more cannabis, and it could be lab tested and marketed, and the citizens would get the benefit of cannabis legalization rather than government-run cartels. And so that's the basis of Initiative 77, and that applies to every state. So if you could take Initiative 77 and create a template, change it any way you want, and submit it in your state, you might be successful even before we are. So I don't want this idea to die. I want to stop seed-to-sales tracking and stop all arrests for cannabis. And stop donut-eating compliance officers from coming to your property.
So is there any states in the union right now that allow you to grow cannabis?
Yeah, there's cannabis is legal in like 30-plus states, and maybe 25 or so you can actually grow some. And there's different amounts in different states.
Okay.
And they all have like little different rules and stuff. And but basically, none of the states want people to grow a decent amount of cannabis because they know it's money. And that's how the government keeps control over you. If they can keep you poor, then they can control you better than if you have money. And so they don't want the citizen to grow themselves out of poverty. They can
right.
keep their thumb on you better if you don't have the ability to grow yourself out of poverty.
Well, the old saying, Doc, the meek will inherit the earth, maybe that would come to play if we could get this embraced by people. And I urge people to go look at the initiative that he's talking about and read it. It's all common sense. And I got to thank you for coming in again today, Doctor. We're out of time. The last minute here, I'll get you your last thoughts, and I'll have to let you go for
Barry,
a while, but we'll definitely get you back soon. Yes, Steve?
I want to add something there. Somebody actually looked up the translation. The ancient Aramaic word for meek was the people that are in control. The minions.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. We'll, okay. Fair enough. Anyways, Doc, thanks for coming in. And like I said, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I'm glad you're bearing with my voice today because it's really giving me trouble. I don't know why, but
it is
what it is. I'm having a hard time with it right now. But anyways, thanks for coming in, Doc. Last word for you before I let you go.
The last word. Cannabis is money. Cannabis and hemp are money. And if the people are allowed to grow sufficient quantities, the money will come to them. And if not, if vertical integration is a lawyer term for government-run cartel or monopoly. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, well, people can find you on Facebook.
Yep.
Hey, guys, go have a look, and please read his initiatives. It is really a common-sense approach to a lot of our problems. Thanks again for coming in, Doc.
Thank you, Barry, for your support. I appreciate it.
Okay. We'll be back, guys, in about 4 minutes with Brad Selzberg, and we're going to talk a little bit about communism in Canada. Back in about 4 minutes. Thanks, Doc. We'll be right back. Okay, well, thanks for coming back for second hour, folks, and much appreciated input from Dr. Allen in the first hour. I always enjoy talking with that man, and I'll get him back again in the near future. Second hour here, I have Brad Salzberg in from the Culture Action Party in Canada. I've been friends with Brad for I don't know how many years now. I think probably 3 years we've known each other, and he's always got good things to say about what the bad things going on in Canada. Brad, welcome back to the show, and why don't we start off with your pet peeve of the week?
Thank you.
So what is your pet peeve?
Good question, because this week it has to do with foreign aid and the foreign aid that Canada has been sending to so-called developing nations for decades, really. But of no surprise, it's at its worst condition or most extreme under Justin Trudeau. And my research has, and I've been at this for a long time. The conclusion I've come to is that our country, and specifically taxpayer dollars from Canadians, are being thrown in what I would call a global garbage can. That, these billions that the government is allocating to Middle Eastern governments and so-called developing nations is largely a farce. I mean, and specifically, I put out an article recently about Jordan and how $800 million that was allocated of Canadian taxpayer money was sent to Jordan and got into the hands of the King of Jordan, who promptly spent it on luxury real estate around the world. Now, that's $800 million. A lot more in that nature has occurred in Afghanistan and other nations, but curiously, the Canadian media and, of course, government themselves, but media specifically, have been covering up and burying this waste of money for decades.
Yeah, and like you said, a lot of it is ending up in the hands of terrorists. If Canadians actually knew this information, Brad, you'd hear an outcry. But like you said, media is absolutely doing their job right now, keeping this from the Canadian people. I read a report there a little while ago about what Justin Trudeau was doing during the CERB programs and where some of the CERB money that was supposed to be spent on Canadians, where some of that money was actually going. And, of course, that has been quashed by the media. But it's exactly the same what you're talking about right now, is they're taking our money and giving it to terrorists and laughing in our faces.
Yeah, I mean, and of course these ideas and thoughts are, they're developing in nature. I'm getting to the point where, I'm seeing and thinking of Canada, really not so much as an actual country or a democratic society, but rather as a business. And in the money laundering business, whereby these billions and a similar dynamic applies in British Columbia with the gambling money and money from China and that whole thing between real estate, the gambling industry, and money from China. So, what appears to me to be a giant money laundering scenario, of which government, and Justin Trudeau in particular, is entirely aware of, and has the media again to they've written on the Chinese gambling area, but the foreign aid area, which I mean, when Trudeau became prime minister, he allocated $10 billion to the Middle East and Africa in taxpayer funds right off the bat over a 10-year period. So, as I've expressed in a few articles, just think about if even half this money or even a quarter of the money, but, say half the money or all of it, which is what I think it should be, was redirected toward domestic economic development, our country would be absolutely booming. We'd be, one of the great success stories of the world. But instead, Justin Trudeau continues to funnel it to Somalia, Iraq, Sudan, mm-hmm. you know, and a host of Pakistan, and all these dozens of so-called developing nations.
Well, maybe we should just take the gloves right off here and call it what it is, Brad. Justin Trudeau is, in my opinion, is Islamic. And I don't say that lightly because I've looked into him a lot. We got to look at where his priorities are, what he's doing with those particular nations in the world as opposed to the rest of the nations in this world. It really, you don't have to be a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist to figure out exactly what this guy's doing and what he's doing with our money. But a lot of this information doesn't make it to the Canadian public, and that's the biggest problem we have. Because I think if Canadians were really aware of what he's doing with all this money, you know, there might be a change in opinion, but the media is just doing such a great job keeping this from Canadians. They're our number one enemy in this country, bar none. Go ahead.
I would agree. I mean, I would, again, you know, my conclusion is that our country is not actually controlled or run by the government. We are run by the a globalist ideological entity of a government, along with the globalist international media. So it's the fusing of the two. And this, you know, we can, you know, not validate, but affirm to some degree when Justin first became prime minister and allocated all this money to CBC and the media organizations. The number was $600 million was the figure that was bandied about, right. You know, which basically can be interpreted as buying the Canadian media. An important point here, and again, obviously that would be suppressed by the media because it's not at all in their best interest, is when this story came out, you know, okay, they're funding CBC and they're funding the uber leftist Toronto Star, which is an embarrassment of a newspaper as far as any Canadian patriot would be concerned, in my opinion. You know, we thought, oh, a handful of the media organizations are receiving this funding. Not true. It's 1,500 media organizations across the country that covers every spectrum within the media, large market, small town, rural, every aspect of business and society is being funded by Justin Trudeau and the Liberal government. Therefore, you have an ownership, really, of media. And therefore, you have, you know, beyond this and taking one step beyond this, what you have is an emulation of communist society. Because, as many people will know, within nations such as China, the media must write and publish what the government wants. If you don't, as a journalist, you can easily end up in jail. So what we see, and we see this in many different aspects of our society under Trudeau, is a replica of the communist society in countries like China and Cuba and the nations which not only Justin but his communist brother Alexandre and Pierre Trudeau before him all admire and venerate, which is complete public knowledge.
Right. Well, we look at the attack on Christian churches and Christian pastors in this country right now, Brad. I mean, it's right off the charts, but it's accelerating. And why is it seem to be that only one denomination is under attack here?
Well, I mean, you know, this is blatantly obvious. I mean, it's not some subtle element of society. And again, you know, as a segue from what we were talking about with replicating communist society, what you speak of is also an emulation of communist society, where in China you attack the Christianity and you, like I just read even today, that the Bible, the New Testament, the Christian Bible is now banned over the internet. So, you know, they stop the download or what have you of it. You know, so what we have is communism is anti-Christian. I mean, that is fundamental. It's anti-religion, yes, in general, that is true, but it is vehemently anti-Christian. So that is what you see in China. Now, since Trudeau came in, we have gone on a one-way trip toward punitive damages toward the church, the Christian faith, pastors, and so on and so forth, without the equivalent of imams or Sikh priests, whatever they're called, and Sikh temples and mosques and all this. It's a one-way targeted thing. And do we see ever media pointing that out? Hey, why is Christianity the only religion targeted in this capacity? And what does it say about our changing society? Nothing, not a speck, not a word. Now, are we to believe these journalists are not capable of comprehending such a basic and obvious thing? Of course they are, but they do not. Why? Because they're controlled by government.
Of course. You're spot on in your assessment there, Brad, that it's pretty obvious right now to anybody that observes what's going on in Canada that the attacks are all directed towards the Christian faith. Look at what they're doing to Arthur Pawlowski in Calgary right now. There's so many of them that come in, shut down the churches, lock the doors, like you said, but you don't hear any pushback against imams. You hear nothing against the temples. You hear nothing, period. It is all targeted towards one religion. Well, it's pretty obvious to people what's going on and what the agenda of this government is. It's communism 2.0. And anybody really read the Communist Manifesto, Brad, because it'll tell you exactly what's going on right now in Canada. You know, Hitler had complete control of all the media in Germany, I believe by 1935, he had complete control of all the media in Germany. So all the German people heard is what the government wanted them to hear. And that's exactly what's going on in Canada right now. That's got to come to a stop. Go ahead.
But you're bringing up a really important point in that these societies, be it fascist or communist or, you know, extreme left or extreme right, when a transition of a country on a historical basis has occurred, it's always, for one thing, it's always incrementally done. It's not unloaded all at once because the general public would freak out. But also, it's done in law. It is done legally. Okay, first this law, then this law, and a continuous restriction of individual freedom and personal rights. Now, when we factor COVID into that situation, we have that very thing, an extreme, impediment on individual rights, and specifically in Canada, Charter of Rights and Freedoms related rights and freedoms. So what we have is COVID as a vehicle to emulate what goes on in authoritarian or totalitarian societies. Now, there's no way that government or, you know, the powers that be are going to roll it out, you know, just blatantly on its own with nothing. So we have COVID as what one may call subterfuge, a surface event to cover up the true agenda. So here we have Canadian society, government and media, you know, going along with it, and the academic world, of course, which is completely Marxist, going along with this entire agenda of the erosion of personal freedoms, as has happened within totalitarian societies of the past and even currently. So you see how it's a substitute, it's subterfuge. And so here we are heading exactly down that path, right, towards authoritarian governance. And again, coming back to the media, their degree of analysis in this area is what? It's zero, nothing.
Yeah,
absolutely. So they're obviously in on it.
Of course they are. So they've been bought and paid for. We have a real problem in Canada. We got a war going on in this country, and a lot of people still have yet not seen it and don't understand. And why they can't see it, I have a hard time understanding that, Brad, because this is really obvious now. They're not hiding what their agenda is. I mean, Trudeau came out and told us that we're heading for the Great Reset, and he wasn't kidding.
No, he wasn't kidding, and you know, in terms of what you're saying, I think that's very true. You know, and it could be, and this is just a personal thought, that these, the war, the big war, it never really ends. It just subsides or increases. And what we have now in 2021, you know, is to use Trudeau's term, postmodern warfare. So it's not fought with guns and tanks, right? It's fought, and it's not behavior. It's thinking. It's the war of the mind, to capture the mind, you know, and propagandize it into a certain way of thinking. So this postmodern warfare, you know, and in a lot of ways it comes down to a similar thing that history shows us, that you know, nationalism versus communism or globalism, you know, and what we have, you know, here is the advent and growth of the communist globalist warfare that began the day Justin Trudeau was elected, as far as I'm concerned. And here's a source, if I may say, here's a source of the social conflict and consternation in Canadian society. The government and media, of course, and academia say it's racism. No, that's not it. It's that the people, the citizenship of Canada, believe in democracy, and the government, media, and academic world believe in communism. There's the conflict, right? So, I mean, you know, this is, like I would say, it's a form of warfare. We just have trouble recognizing it, because right, it's delivered in a way that it has never been delivered before.
Absolutely correct. The enemy's inside the gate, but he's behind the curtains, guys. So you got to pull the curtains back to see him. But he's inside the gates right now, and he's going to destroy this country. He's going to destroy this country in a very, very short period of time, Brad, if we don't stop this. And I wouldn't say that with a more truthful statement.
Because
go ahead.
I think that. Really, you know, and you know, I've been at this for decades, for one thing, not always in the form of Cultural Action Party, which I founded in 2016, but for decades even before that, at least 20 years. What I see is a steady incremental erosion of democracy, that Canada has a limited lifespan as a functioning democracy, and that the day will come where we do not vote for a party or prime minister or anything of that nature. And the difference being here is we're being conditioned to accept it. So by the time it occurs, you know, this globalist machine will have actually kind of brainwashed or propagandized people into believing that it is the best thing to do. And if I may say, you know, part of this comes down. So when we talk about, you know, why Justin Trudeau spends the deficit is $1 trillion and all this, there's a specific reason, because one day we're going to go bankrupt, and one day the government is going to say, well, the only way or best way to get out of this national bankruptcy is to end democracy and have a one government society. That's what I think is going to happen within 50 years, or maybe less. So there we see, if I'm right, you know, that we can see the purpose of these unlimited deficits, right? They have a purpose. All this has a purpose. Every move that this guy is making, Trudeau, and whoever is behind him, because, you know, he's not thinking of this himself. He doesn't have the brains to do this. This is extremely complex, strategic, long-term planning. He could never do this. So there's something behind him, you know, and he is the mascot. He is the puppet put up there to as the symbol.
Well, you know, just after he became prime minister, Brad, he had a 2-hour closed-door meeting with George Soros in Davos. No press allowed, nobody except for him and George. They sat down and talked for 2 hours. What do you think they talked about? And if you think George is the guy in control, I think there's many people above his head. But he was the messenger. He got to Trudeau that day, and the plan was laid out for the next 4 years, what he was going to do in Canada. And boy, is he ever making a mess of this country, my friend.
Yeah.
So none of this is, you know, by chance. This is all planned.
You know, and this is, Yeah, I think it's all planned. And you know, I have no more knowledge of what is going to come than anyone else. But I think that Canada is not run by Canadians. I think it's run by, you know, the 1%, the elite and oligarchy, as they might call it, of, you know, the billionaire Bill Gates and George Soros and rich, you know, Arab oil money and China communist money and all these. And it sees Canada as this giant geographic space, which it is, and that's completely empty. You see, Canada, I don't think it's a country. I think it's an experiment, right? And, you know, we're going to be, as Trudeau alluded to with this postmodernism and this no core identity theory, you know, that we are a giant experiment. And within this experiment, the one thing I do believe is that English Canada, Anglophone Canada, whatever you want to, you know, call that, is going to be gone, and Christian Canada is also going to be gone, and in time, you know, and we're going to be, just like Trudeau said, without articulating what it meant, you know, we're going to be this postmodern, giant communist population with 100 million people, but the roots of the country, the English and French Canadian roots, and 1867, and the Constitution, and Confederation, so this is going to be meaningless. It's not going to mean anything. We're not going to have a history.
Well, it's meaningless now. They're stomping on our rights, and nobody's doing anything about it, Brad. You hear crickets from the Canadian public. They know what they can get away with. Wait a second. All of a sudden, it went from 2 weeks to flatten the curve to what we are now, a segregated socialist society. If people allow this vaccine passport agenda to continue on, then we will be completely under the boot of medical tyranny in less than 3 or 4 years, because they ain't going to take their foot off our neck. They're pushing the Canadian people. They want to see how we're going to respond. Canadians are just laying down for them, Brad, and that's a scary thought. But the general population, I see people outside walking around with masks on their face. We know we got a big problem. And to try and reach those people, it's almost like you're trying to pull teeth out of a dinosaur, that no matter how much information you give them, they just don't want to see it. That's one of the biggest problems I see right now. But in the flip side, I'm going to say that I am starting to see people wake up, Brad. Go ahead.
I would say that they are waking up, and slowly they are waking up. But the question I have is, what vehicle do we have in terms of social or political organization to actually even fight this or, you know, overcome it? I mean, I hate to be negative, but I don't really see the vehicle. Part of the reason is what I call the race card. You know, like everything we say is racism and everything, you know, and through this method, you know, that comes this way to keep us down. But you did mention something very important about COVID and vaccine, you know, and you said, you know, dividing the people. And this is a critical point. You know, if you look at going back to communist ideology and Marxism, right, that it explicitly says, I don't know if it's in the Communist Manifesto or wherever it is, but, you know, this they're writing that, you know, the goal of communism is to divide the people from each other, and even the vehicle to do it is race, is racism. And you know, so again, when we look at Canadian society and what Trudeau has perpetuated, and even through examples like these apologies to every, you know, special interest group and so-called minority he could find, you know, we failed you, we failed you. What kind of line is that? We failed you. What does that even mean? You know, living Canadians failed you, historical, the government, you know, he's just a moron in this way. It's so stupid. but you know, and this is the thing, that it begins to divide people, you know, and the whites are all racist and the Muslims are all victims and all this stereotyping, you know,
vaxxers against anti-vaxxers.
So you have, and yes, and that too. So they move into a new realm or develop a new area, which is vaxxers versus anti-vaxxers. So all these divisive elements of society begin to come in, and this is all since Trudeau became prime minister on October 18th, 2015. It's not you know, not every bit. There's historical elements, but, you know, really, I mean, all the, and you think the media could say one word, hey, have you noticed Canada's like being converted to a communist society, and it began the day Trudeau became prime minister? No, they're never going to say something like that. But, you know, this is COVID. No matter how you look at it, with COVID, it has done what goes on within authoritarian societies. Don't stand here. Don't walk there. You know, don't say this. Go to jail if you don't do it. You know, protest. You can't protest in public because of COVID. You know, I mean, about that one area, right? COVID prevents group gatherings, right? Group gatherings can be used as political pushback against the government. So they're just canceling our democratic and charter-based rights. If you notice, and this is the most, you know, it's just insane, that you know, all the charter rights that have been leveraged since 1988, when Pierre Trudeau forced it upon Canada, you know, and all the cases and the racism and the LGBT, all of a sudden, none of it applies to COVID. There's no charter rights related to COVID at all, right? Mm. So I hope I'm not rambling here, but I'm just trying to make this one point, okay? Related to this COVID and the vaccines and the passports, you know, the abortion movement for 50 years has said we have the right to control our own bodies. And it's been accepted for 50 years as the essence of pro-choice ideology, right? But do you see the right to control your own body utilized to push back against COVID vaccinations? Never. Not once. So these are examples of how media and the hypocrisy, working for government, partnering with government. I mean, it's so very obvious, but the problem is if people don't dig down into it and make an effort to uncover and discover these things, if they just read the headlines and just read the Globe and Mail and so forth, they won't see it.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people in Canada do just go home at night and watch CBC and Global and drink that diarrhea and go to bed. And until we can change that, people actually start looking into stuff themselves. When I have conversations with Brad, you probably approach people the same way, is that, you know, we're only telling you things that we've looked into ourselves. So why don't you take a little time and go on the internet and look into some of these things yourself and you know, be responsible as an adult and look into it. Without blindly following what the government says. I also ask people, I tell them, I say to them, has Trudeau ever told you a truth? Has that man ever told Canadians a truth since he became prime minister? And I challenge people to give me a truth. The only truth that he brought forward was he said he was going to legalize cannabis, and he did. But everything that's ever come out of that mouth of that man is a lie, period. So you expect him to be telling us the truth about these so-called jabs? He stands up there and tells us that they're safe and effective. Unbelievable that he's getting away with this. But he's not going to for much longer. Go ahead.
I mean, you know, I'm negative. You know, I'm thinking and speaking negatively without showing any positive light at the end of the tunnel or anything. However, I am saying what I truly believe. I mean, you know, Justin Trudeau may one day find himself out of office, and when he does, I'll be thrilled. I'll be so thrilled. I want the Trudeau family gone from politics forever. And it'll be a good moment if it ever happens. But it's not going to change the political ideology and belief of the Liberal Party or Liberal government of Canada. It's going to continue to roll. And that is the unfortunate thing. You know, like I have said, that, you know, I don't think the Conservative Party are ever going to form a federal government again, which I do believe. And so if we keep having election upon election for years, and the Liberals win each time over and over, regardless of whether it's Trudeau or Chrystia Freeland, or who knows who else they're going to get in there one day, which will be a migrant or third world candidate, no doubt, eventually.
Jagmeet Singh.
Who's going to beat them? Yeah, or the NDP and Liberals are going to merge, and then Singh is,
Yeah, they've got the control.
I'll tell you one thing, Trudeau's about to announce his cabinet, I think, in about 10 days' time, maybe. And I was looking back at the cabinets historically, just going back 2019 and 2015 and everything. When you look at this, it's like you see it. Like, I think there were four, in his last cabinet, there were four white male MPs out of 36. Maybe not 36. It's over 30. So, if you extract the French Canadians, in cabinet, you extract the female and you extract the Sikhs and Muslims and everything, you come up with four or five white Canadian males out of over 30. And he's about to announce his cabinet. You go look at it when it comes out. The LGBT are talking how it's going to be the most gay cabinet ever, and the Sikhs are thrilled, and the Muslims are thrilled. They're all thrilled. But what about old stock Canada? What about Anglophone Canada? It's a community. It's the silent majority for now. No one ever mentions them. There's no mention of them at all. What about the fact that multiculturalism has done nothing good for Anglophone Canadians? It's only damaged us for the past 50 years, and it wasn't passed. It was passed by a French Canadian, Trudeau, the communist, Pierre. So, none of this stuff has done our community any good. It's only done us harm. And, is that going to change?
Well, if you speak like that, of course, in today's world, Brad, you're branded a racist because, everybody should be able to come to Canada. Everybody should be able to enjoy the country. But you know what? When my predecessors, my forefather came to Canada, my great-great-grandfather, he didn't come here waiting and know there was going to be a welfare check waiting for him when he got here. He wasn't going to get $600 a month for each one of his children. If you look at the demographics of where Trudeau is bringing people into Canada from, he is displacing the Anglo-Saxon population. We have over a million people coming into Canada every year now through immigration programs, through foreign worker programs, through student exchange programs. None of these people are going to leave Canada, Brad. Once they've got into this country, that's it. They're here, and they will stay. So we got over a million people coming into Canada every year. He's built himself, and he's building himself, a very good voter base. Everything in this country is determined by Toronto and Montreal and where are all the immigrants going. And look at everything else he's done to make it legal for them to vote. He is just on a warpath against us right now. He wants to destroy our culture, period. And you're absolutely correct. So what's the answer? We have to have a balance in immigration. Like I said, our country was built on immigration. But it's not the same as it was back then. It's completely changed right now. Go ahead.
It has completely changed. There's no question about it. And what you're touching on is a really critical issue, and it's one that, has served as the foundation for CAP, for Cultural Action Party, for the last 6 years. And that is, there's political representation for the Muslim community and the Sikh community and the Chinese community, but there's nothing for the Anglophone community. And that's exactly the way Trudeau and the Liberals want it to remain. And so CAP, in a small way, I'm not saying in a huge way, but, we've represented the Anglophone Canadians and attempted to, the old stock Canadians. It's not limited to Anglophones only. European Canadian and so on and so forth. And in a relatively small way, that's what I tried to do And, of course, especially when I began, you know, it was the racist this and the racist that and the neo-Nazi and the this and that. And, you know, but that's really, is it really that? I mean, consider the fact that the Muslim Canadian population has their National Council of Canadian Muslims is probably the most powerful special interest group or multicultural group in the country. No one runs around calling them racist for that. So Anglophones, you know, based on what you're describing, the demographics of the country, we have every right to organize politically. And we damn well should. And so should Christian Canada. You know, and that's really, in my opinion, what Arthur Pulaski should be doing. That's exactly what he should be doing, is organizing politically a Christian-oriented political party that, you know, can represent that community within society. And and so here we see how we're getting crushed by multiculturalism. Pierre Trudeau, he started it, you know, and we have no voice. When we do speak, we're branded as racist and bigots and xenophobes. You know, so we're in a very precarious situation, and we're not going to be any kind of demographic majority for that much longer, maybe 30 years, you know. And then what's going to happen? We'll be the minority, and they'll still be calling us racist.
Well, until we can correct the situation in our voting system. Go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, proportional representation, it has... I'm personally undecided on it, because to me, if Justin Trudeau and the Liberals push it, then there's something wrong with it, because it's obviously to their advantage. So I don't know, because they're not going to push a system that's disadvantageous to them. That would never happen. So, you know, I'm a bit undecided about that. But whether political change, you know, and this is the big problem, in my opinion, one of them, is that we're caught in this three-way political dynamic of the Liberals, the Conservatives, and the NDP. And when people talk about the People's Party of Canada and those votes, and, well, it's a lost vote, not lost, but you know, it just helps Trudeau get elected, you know. Whether there is truth in that or not, the point is that we must break out of this political status quo, or nothing is ever going to change. So in that capacity, I'm in favor of the PPC and the Maverick Party, also of the West, that's developing a bit right now. And because we need to change this structure. That's just, I mean, you know, in we've only had either a conservative government or a liberal government in our entire history. We're locked into this circular, you know, trend that just never ends. And now it's liberal all the way, in my opinion.
Well, they're all on board with the Paris Climate Accords. They're all on board with globalist agenda. So we have no opposition. We have no voice for Canadians in Ottawa in any shape or form right now. Would the Liberals get 151 seats? The NDP have 25. Well, if you add those together, folks, you have a majority. They, between the two of them, can pass anything they want in Canada, and we have no opposition to it in any shape or form. That's got to change. Oh. Also, Brad, like I said, Toronto and Montreal decide the fate of Canada. The Golden Horseshoe and the Montreal area and that corridor decide the fate of the whole country. We have no voice out west to what's going on in our country, none whatsoever. That has got to change. And I can see why we're seeing such separatist sentiment in Western Canada right now. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, the Western, you know, political solidarity, whatever you want to call it, you know, the thing about these things is they have every right to exist. And the PPC, they have every right to exist. As long as a political party adheres to the Canadian Elections Act, that piece of legislation, and they do not break the law, they don't, you know, breach the criminal code, and they stick with the charter, they should be able to, they are able to do whatever they want. That's Canada. I mean, that's democracy. But you see how it goes now whenever any alternate party develops or leader, you know, And it's, oh, well, they're racist. Oh, well, you know, they threw, you know, like now they're saying that they hurled rocks at Justin Trudeau when it was a handful of little tiny gravel that someone threw. Now it's hurling rocks, and they were the PPC, and they were the white supremacists, and they were, you know, it's so bogus. I mean, it's just a lie, you know, so, as if Canada, you know, has any chance of becoming white supremacist. We'll be lucky if we maintain equality with the racialized communities in the long run. We'll be lucky, you know, if we're not catapulted into second class status, citizenship status, let alone, you know, supremacy. That, you know, it's an absurdity.
Well, you know, because they kept Maxime Bernier out of the national debates. We saw the rise in popularity in the PPC. There was no coverage on mainstream about what was going on with the PPC. Complete quash of information from the Canadian public. Because I think they've realized at that point that this party actually represented a serious threat to the establishment. The Canadians were listening to what the platform of that party was. They're the only party speaking and standing against what is going on in this country right now, and they're gaining popularity. I think they'll be a force to reckon with if we're allowed freedom of access to the Canadian people, which we weren't allowed during this last election cycle. I think the whole thing was a sham myself, Brett. And Trudeau got what he want, man. He's got between him and Jagmeet Singh. We know they have backdoor deals going on between him and Jagmeet. They've got complete control over the country. So we're in for a rough ride, my friend.
I believe you're right, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, it, like I said, if I saw a bright light, and I used to have some optimism about our future, you know, the only thing I can say is that in this regard is that political organization is what counts, and we need political organization like the PPC, like the Maverick Party, like even a small party called the Christian Heritage Party. You don't have to be a Bible-thumping believer. You know, that's not really the point. The point is more cultural, and it's more to offset against these other religious political, like, that's the thing about Islam, and this is one of the reasons why it's so successful in the Western world, is because as a so-called religion, it combines politics and religion, whereas Christianity does not do that, and that's one of the main reasons why the church is getting hammered, absolutely hammered, and you know, so we've, you know, that community should, they've got to change and adapt, you know, and say, okay, well, we are going to get political and you know, and begin to organize politically. So I think the answer, if there is one, lies within political organization and beginning to fight fire with fire. You know, you are the Muslim, this, and there's about 1,000 organizations, you know, nonprofits, there's like thousands of them. And yet, yes. Christian or what, you know, other, and even, you know, Anglophone, which is, you know, what I think, or European Canadians or anything like this. Like, if you look at just quickly, you know, I knew this lady from the Polish nonprofit, and she said, yeah, well, we have to fight to get $10,000 out of the government. Like, we have to kill ourselves to get, you know, as a nonprofit, to get $10,000 now. There are literally billions that have gone toward racializing third world and Sikh and Muslim and Chinese. The amount of money that's gone to them is gigantic. And here's the Polish community. They can barely get $10,000. You know, so, I mean, the imbalance is crazy.
Yeah, well, you know what? I guess our call out today would be to the people of Calgary, Brad, because they have a chance tomorrow to send a very clear and loud message to the government of Canada. If Kevin Johnson was named mayor of Calgary, you would see a ripple go across this country that I believe right now is so necessary. So I'm kind of hoping for a little bit of a miracle. Whether you like him or hate him, he would totally turn upside down in Calgary. What Nemish has done there in the last 4 or 5 years is just, it's criminal. And that would be a start. That's where we take the power back, is in our communities. And I'm just hoping that Kevin makes it to Sumeria tomorrow in Calgary. So if you're in Calgary, guys, you got to go out and support Kevin J. Johnson. Love him or hate him, you got to support him. Go ahead, Brett.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, just on, it's a bit related, but more on the provincial level is this question that's going to be included on the referendum about equalization payments. And, you know, and in the media you read, oh, well, here's the downside of canceling it. And you're looking at it, you know, knowing that some, whatever, huge billions upon billions have been extracted from Alberta taxpayers and economy and shipped directly to where? Quebec. And who
imagine
is the
that.
Founder
imagine
of the
that.
National Energy Program? Pierre Trudeau. Yeah, imagine. Who founded the National Energy Program in the 80s? Pierre Trudeau. The Trudeaus.
No
right?
connection there, Brad. You're a conspiracy
nut.
Well, you know what? Funny when
sucking
when,
the dollars out of Western Canada.
Exactly. Well, remember the one-finger salute that he gave to the Westerners. We'll never forget that from Pierre. And that was his feelings being expressed. And look what they've done to the West now.
It's all in the family.
Well, it is. And it's Justin's, all in the family. Justin's just carrying the flag forward. I mean, wait a second, Brad. We have so much oil in Canada right now that we should not be importing one single barrel from anywhere else in the world. We have total self-sufficiency on oil in Canada.
Well,
if it was allowed to go forward, and why isn't that? Why are we buying oil from Saudi Arabia and landlocking our Alberta oil?
Some people may know. You know, this is a bit of a simplistic answer, but it is true that the Trudeau money is rooted in oil and in the and you know, like this, it is Eastern. It's Eastern dominated because the Saudi Arabian oil ships to the refinery in New Brunswick. The name is escaping me for a minute, but and from there is distributed to Quebec. And basically, the more a Saudi oil that Canada consumed, the more money that the Trudeau cult makes. And even so far as that, Justin actually, what do you call it, gave an exemption for Saudi oil on the carbon tax. So
of course,
oil that of comes course. From Saudi Arabia shipped is exempt from the bloody carbon tax. Well, the average Canadian pays through the nose.
And that's all good for Canada, isn't it, Brad?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, this guy is
it's
such
all
a piece of work.
It's all good for the East, for Quebec. You know, it's all self-serving. It's just completely self-serving.
I'm being sarcastic.
But we've got to organize politically. That's where the answer is. No, the answer is political organization. You know, some of it is rolling a little bit. Like I say, People's Party of Canada, a maverick party, who plan to run candidates in every Western riding in the next election, whenever that comes. So they're going to be a player, I hope. And if people don't know, their model is kind of an emulation of Quebec and the Bloc Québécois, who are completely... You know, I'm not sure they should even be there, but, you know, they only run candidates in Quebec. They're entirely Quebec-centric. And the Maverick Party is, you know, trying to do some of that for the West. So these are good developments.
Yeah, you know, the PPC, looking at polls just prior to the election there, and some of the polls had them running as high as 8% popularity in the country. NDP, I believe, were at about 15 or 14% population or popularity, and they ended up with 25 seats, and yet the PPC has failed to secure a seat in Canada. That kind of smells a little fishy to me, especially Brad, a couple of the ridings that I kind of figured for sure these people were going to get in because of the popularity of the individuals in the riding, and yet we still have yet to have a person in Ottawa as a voice. So tell me that isn't fixed, my friend.
I believe that it is highly biased in that way. And but here's what I see as kind of the bottom line on that, right? Once it's like putting your finger in a dam and then the dam, you know, like explode. You know, they don't want to see one seat. Once you get one seat in there from the PPC, you know, that's actually a big development, right? And these people want to maintain what you would call the status quo, keep things the way they are, the way they've always been. So, you know, they're afraid of even one PPC seat because that could open the door for a surge. But, you know, I think the PPC got something like 800,000 votes in the election, pretty substantial amount. Like, so their percentage of the popular vote from that point of view was very good. They just didn't get anyone elected, but, you know, I think there's going to be an election again within 2 years.
Well, it's a real travesty that the media completely quashed any information from the PPC and didn't allow Canadians the opportunity to hear an opposing voice to everything else that they're hearing, the rhetoric every day that's being put out by the NDP and the Liberals and the Conservatives, that all the same beast. One of them is wearing lipstick, the other one isn't. That's the only difference between them. And I think we're going to see something happen in Canada here in the next couple of years as things progressively get worse. I hope that things change here real quick because I honestly believe that if this is allowed to go on for another 4 years, the window might just close on us, Brad, and our ability to stop this insanity. I look at what they're doing with the vaccination programs, how they're going to roll that out. You know that Trudeau's ordered another 90 million doses of vaccines. He stands up in front of the camera and tells Canadians that once we're all double vaccinated, it's all going to go back to normal. The guy is such a liar, boy. If he was Pinocchio, he'd have a nose going from coast to coast. They're never going to let this go away. As long as Canadians keep going along with this agenda, I think this will be the demise of my country, myself, honestly. So I hope we put a stop to that right away.
I think it's an absolute game changer. I really do. Like, I don't see when we say go back to normal. I don't believe we're ever going to do that. I don't think it's really capable. You know, not that we'll be wearing masks forever, but I think the implications of this, the impact on society, the stringent rules-based element is going to stay. And that I see rooted in totalitarianism, mm-hmm. You know, that's a fairly extreme word, but that's what I see. And COVID comes from China, and China is that kind of society. And it seems very, very obvious to me anyway, that, you know, there's much more at play here than simply a virus and getting sick or not getting sick.
This was never, ever about the virus. This was about getting this so-called jab into everybody's body on the planet Earth. I've never seen something pushed so hard as what we've seen with these vaccine programs. Now we have the vaccine passport being rolled out across the country, Brad. We have to stand against that. We have to put that to a stop, because if the government's allowed to dictate to us what we can put into our bodies, there will be no turning back. And we're really on the precipice right now of falling into that pit, my friend. So I hope Canadians wake up. Now, on the positive side, before you go, I'm just going to share a couple positives.
Yeah.
Brad, that there is large groups of people with a lot of power and some money behind them that I'm privy to in Canada right now that are really going to be pushing hard back against this government in the next 30 to 45 days. You're going to see some stuff happen that I believe will be a game changer. I'm praying that it does go the way I've been told it's going to go. Let's just hope that it does, folks, because we are in one big pile of trouble right now. Our country is in great, great peril. And I couldn't say that more emphatically. Brad, we're down to about 2 minutes, and I'm going to have to let you go, buddy. I've enjoyed this conversation. I love the input you bring forward and your different opinions on things. And I'll give you a couple minutes here for your last thoughts, and then I'll have to let you go, my friend.
That's fine, yeah. I mean, we covered some important territory. I think that, you know, it's a lot of this comes down to what, you know, you call the dissemination of the information. You know, like what we're talking about is being listened to by X amount of people, and what I've published, you know, in the Cultural Action Party website is being read by thousands, and it's had a good audience. But, you know, the in a lot of ways, it comes down to, you know, to what degree is the messaging getting out there? So if our kind of messaging, let's call it, you know, is being consumed by 5% of Canadians, and 95% is liberal globalist woke culture, right? So I mean, it can have some impact, but in a lot of ways, this is what it comes down to. Like we might be preaching to the converted, or we are, you know, opening people's minds to some other ideas. But at the end of the day, you know, it kind of comes down to that percentage. Are we reaching 5% of society, 10, 20? You know, and this is the part that if we could get that up and get that, you know, to even 20%, you know, we'd really accomplish something big. And of course, the media is on the opposite side, pushing back, and even not to stretch this out too much, but that's at the root, I think, of the war on social media. And they talk about freedom of speech, but what they really want is their market share back that social media has stolen away from mainstream media. That's what they're really after. So in a way, it's media war, you know, and it's percentage of market share. So if we can get that up through some of the ideas that you talk about, or through these Western parties and PPC and Max Bernier, you know, it's all about getting the word out. What percentage are we doing that successfully?
Thank you for coming in, Brad. It's been an interesting conversation, and people can find you at the Cultural Action Party of Canada. Go ahead and have a look at his website, folks, and hope to have you back here in the near future, Brett. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks very much, Barry. I appreciate it.
Okay, folks, I'll be back in a few minutes with the Jürgen. And I know there's a few people been waiting to hear from this guy, because he is he's a bit of a spark plug, to say the least. I'll be back in a few minutes with Jürgen Vollrath.
Thank you.
Well, welcome back to Third Hour, folks, and thanks to Brad for coming in and sharing some of his thoughts today. I always kind of like to save the best to the last, and I shouldn't say that because it'll go to his head, but it's always great to have Jürgen Wallrath back on the show. And the one thing I'm going to say about Jürgen here in the last couple of weeks, he's kind of really made me smile because he's always sending me funny stuff now. And you know what, folks? It's really important that we laugh a little bit here and there, because if we don't, literally, we're going to go insane. So thanks for the funnies you send me all the time, Jürgen. And I know you wanted to talk about a song today. Welcome back to the show.
Well, hey, Barry, thanks a lot for having me. And yeah, you know, talk about funny things. I just come to the realization, of course, my birthday's tomorrow. I'm going to be 72 tomorrow.
Oh, and, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, it is funny. I come to the realization.
You lasted that long?
Cremation is probably my last hope for a smoking hot body. So that's where I'm at these days, right? Yeah. Anyways, probably a bad joke. But anyways, I was going to give you the three unwritten rules of business just so you could be successful, because I wanted to go into a motivational speaking career, right? So the three unspoken rules of business are 1, 2, 3. Got it? Okay. Let's carry on. Yeah, we wanted to talk about a song.
Go ahead.
All right. Let's get down to it. I've been a musician. My first endeavor into the field of entertainment was when I was 14 years old in 1963. I did a stand-up comedy routine at a hotel in downtown Ottawa. I wasn't even of legal drinking age, but I was allowed to perform my show. It was pretty cool. But when I was 19, I was over in Europe, and I became a lead singer in a rock and roll band, and I did that for about a year. I toured Southern Germany, a little bit of France. We played in different places, and we got a lot of gigs with the armed forces. I was going to get a career, actually. We were going to get signed to an EMI recording contract, and the band broke up because of various nefarious things that happened around me, and a lot of shit came down. A lot of stuff came down. Pardon my language. I'm sorry. I apologize for that. Let's get to this song. Getting to music, I've been a lead singer in various forms in my life. I've had duets, I've done recordings, all of these things. I've done movies and stuff like that, as you know, Barry. But the song Hotel California by the Eagles, if we, all of us, probably your audience, is aware of the Standard Hotel and the stories that evolve around the Standard Hotel in LA. I'm not sure if you're aware, Barry, are you, we've heard stories of really bad things that have happened there. And I now, when I hear the song Hotel California, that's where it takes me. It takes me to the Standard Hotel, because we know that these secret societies have to tell us what they're doing. And they have to tell us in various ways. They tell us through the arts, specifically through Hollywood, specifically through music, right? And if you look at the lyrics of Hotel California, such a lovely place, such a lovely face, ready a room at the Hotel California, what a nice surprise, bring your alibis. There's so many lyrics in there that will, the next time you hear that song, if you can equate it to horrific things being done in a specific place, I think that song totally relates to the Standard Hotel. And why that song gets played a lot is because they're telling us what they've done there. They tell us what they've done there. Mirrors on the ceiling, the pink champagnes on ice. We are all just prisoners here of our own device. In the master's chambers, they're gathered for their feast. They stab it with their steely knives, but they just can't kill the beast. And if you remember also in the lyrics, I don't have them in front of me, but also in the lyrics, there's bring the champagne, but don't bring that spirit here, because we haven't had that spirit here since 1969. They're telling you that in that place, they don't even drink champagne. There's something else they drink. There's a hint for you there. We haven't had that spirit here since 1969, right? So I'm just telling your audience, music, movies, all of these things are indicators of where we are. They've been telling us through all of these things where we are today. They've been giving us clues and signs all along the way to where we are today, because they have to. We know that, right?
That's how they get their jollies, Jürgen.
Exactly.
Well, look, another example. Let's talk about Zombie Apocalypse, the movie. I mean, it came out, how many years ago did that come out? I think it was probably 15 years ago that movie came out. And, of course, everybody laughed and said, you know, look at these people walking around like zombies. That can never happen in society. Well, you know, Jürgen, we're only one injection away from that point right now. And people don't see it. They don't understand it. But you're absolutely correct. Everything they've ever done to us in a detrimental fashion in society, they have put in front of us. And we don't see it. But they do. And it's part of their doctrine. I believe they're forced to expose this to us prior to doing it to us. So the Eagles, I've looked into them quite a bit over the years, and a lot of their songs are exactly along the same line as the Hotel California. There's multiple symbolisms in the songs, but you don't pick up on it because it's just another song. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's so many other bands and so many other songs that you can even go back to the 60s, the Beatles. She was just 17, if you know what I mean. There's so many demonic things that happened back in the 60s. Music was like, I know, because you and I know we grew up in it. I mean, I was a teenager in the 60s when this whole rock and roll revolution happened. And what we saw was, looking back on it, I see it as they brought out the Beatles, first of all, right, which was this kind of symbolism of these kind of bad boys, but they're good boys at heart, right? They're bad because they're playing this rock and roll music, but they're good, clean kids. And then along comes the Rolling Stones, which were the antithesis of the Beatles. So they played humanity off with these two bands, where one band was thrown to us and marketed to us as the wholesome equivalent of what Rosemary Clooney and Bing Crosby and all of those would have been to past generations. And then they throw out Rolling Stones, and then they go beyond that to Ozzy Osbourne. Then they go to Alice Cooper, right? You can see the evolution of the dark side of that. But it started with basically the division of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, the good rock band against the, you know, please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and fame, right? I'm the devil, right?
So, I can't get no satisfaction.
Well, yeah. So you had the complete opposite, opposing sort of musical, how would you call it? It's like musical javelins, right? They're throwing this at the populace in terms of, here, you're supposed to accept either one of these, but we're going to throw both of them at you as if they're both equal, and they're both to be appreciated and both to be adulated in equal ways. And at the end of the day, they even promoted the darker one even more, because more of that became prevalent in rap music, and as rock progressed into different forms of music, the darker side seemed to come out more than love songs and ballads did, right? You saw sort of love songs and ballads kind of disappear in the crooner age, when you had such beautiful songs that were all about love and romance and you know, courting a girl and all these things that were so kind of corny. You think of them these days as corny, but they really are heartfelt, and it's all about love and passion and compassion for humans and humanity, and a man and a woman being a gentleman and a lady. And so with the progression of music the way it has been, it's kind of torn fabric in our society, all by design, of course. And it's really sad to see, because there's so much lovely music out there. And that's what it was meant to do. It was meant to soothe the savage beast. But what they've done is they've turned it into a weapon of hypnosis against mass society, mass societal cravings for stardom and fame and all this kind of stuff. So it's very
well. Exciting. You look at the correlation between demonic symbolism in rock and roll now, and the downfall of our society. And I call it the downfall of our society because our society, as a moral society, has kind of hit bottom. You know, it's funny. My daughter says to me all the time now, Jürgen, she says, you know, Dad, I go back and I listen to some of those songs in the '60s and '70s, and that's just great music.
She says, today's music sucks, Dad. So now my daughter, all she listens to is stuff from the 60s and 70s and 80s. And she says, wow, music was really good back then. Now what do you got? You got guys up on stage murdering priests and religious people, and people are gobbling it up. What comes out of Hollywood and comes out of the music industry right now, I can't even listen to it, Jurgen. I can't. Go ahead. Yeah, well, so demonic.
You look at the pop stars that the young kids are told to admire.
Idolize.
Katy Perry's and all of them, they're all demonic. Madonna. And look at the outfits they wear. It's all satanic and satanic ritualistic halftime performances at the Super Bowl and all this kind of stuff. It just hasn't stopped. And you were right when you said it. The moral degradation of our society is a big part of why we are in the situation we're in. People don't know up from up or down from down, so they don't know what's right or what's wrong. If you look at it, I mean, the communists have convinced the general population of the planet that global warming is a greater threat than communism.
Right. And they've done it very efficiently.
They've done it efficiently through political correctness, through censorship, and through controlling mass media and controlling the narrative every step of the way. So we've had to be politically correct. You look at 30 years ago, you were afraid to mention the word communism. It was taboo to even say the word socialism. Oh, my God, we're creeping towards socialism. No, we're not. You're a conspiracy theorist. Well, yes, we are. You can see it in all the laws they're passing. Well, no, they're not.
Say, Barry.
Yes.
Can I add something here? You know.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Jurgen just said communism and the media. I immediately thought of, well, not just communism, but Zionism, because the Zionists started communism. And they also control the media.
What do you think on that thought there, Jurgen?
There is that factor as well. And you look at the Freemasons. I mean, you look at the head of the Freemasons, of course, is the Queen, right? That's where that sits, if anyone's ever wondered about that. That's why they have her in place. That's why there's still a royalty, because the Freemasons need that to set them apart from the rest of society. So the rest of society can cater to the royals. And you still have probably the majority of the populace still admire the royal family, even though you could throw dead babies out the window of Buckingham Palace. They'd still say, oh, my God, God save the Queen.
Right. Well, and then, of course, you know, the Catholic Church was taken over by the Jesuits in the 17th century. And if you look into Rome and look at the symbolism in the Catholic Church, there is absolutely nothing Christian about the Catholic Church anymore. You're going to show me something that's Christian in the Catholic Church. All I see is pagan and demonic symbolism all through the church now. So what's going on there, my friend?
Yeah, it was really funny. I was raised as a Roman Catholic boy, and I went to communion and all that when I was young. But as I started, when I came to Canada and started going to church here, I started to see what it really was. And I saw these people. I looked at the men around me and their actions and what they did during the course of the week. And they would excuse their actions during the course of the week every Sunday by saying confession. And the priest would say, well, all you'd have to do is say a few Hail Marys and you can get away with all these indiscretions you did during the course of the week. To me, I always looked at that and said, no, this is not right. Because some of these men took it to extremes. They felt that they could get away with absolutely anything and then on Sunday go to confession and be forgiven. And I'm talking about absolutely anything. Okay? So it's demonic. It's demonic to think that they would set up an organization that would say, you know what, you can go ahead and do anything you want as long as you come to church on Sunday, slip me a few dollars and go to confession. I'll forgive you for everything.
Well, wait a second. What happens if you die on a Wednesday or a Thursday and you haven't got the confession? and you just killed 18 people in a mass murder. What happens to you there?
I guess you're euchre.
Wait, guys, you can't kill me till Sunday because I got to go to confession first. Then I can book out of here. What a joke it is.
But it was, it was so. I saw through that as a young guy. And then, you know, trying to fit into this society, I ended up going with my friends to all their various different churches. I ended up going to every Sunday sort of to a different church with a different friend, trying to figure it all out and where I actually fit and where does this religion fit in my brain. And, but at the end of the day, I found that most people are just looking for something to have faith in, right? We all just need something to have faith in, whether it's in the ones you love, if it's in God, if it's in something. You need to have faith in something, or life is pretty well meaningless. You have to have some kind of hope. You know, how dark is your life if you don't have hope in a bright future or hope in? And that's what they're stealing from us, of course, these days. And that's why we have to be resolute and we have to be stronger than ever before for our kids, because I see a very bright light at the end of this. I really do. I've never been so calm inside in my life. I feel that this darkness that we're going through is a test. It's a test for humanity. It's to see if humanity will rise. And I think we will. I think goodness will prevail. I think the goodness in man will overcome all this. I know it's taking a long time for some people, and some people will never see what is going on. The brainwashing is complete with most. The programming has been going on for so long with television that it's really too late for some, especially some of the older folks. You can't, if they haven't done their own research, there's no way you'll ever change their impression that CBC is the ultimate in news, you know. Mm-hmm. You'll never change that in some people's minds. So,
I felt that way.
Struggle ahead.
Yeah, I felt that way about a lot of people, but I have seen a few people that I thought were completely lost starting to come around now, because they're actually hearing about things inside the community that isn't being reported on mainstream media. Up here, we've had quite a few reports of elders dying on the reservations, and these elders were the first ones that actually took these jabs. And that conversation now, even though, like I said, it hasn't been reported on the mainstream up here, why they're getting away without reporting these deaths, the villages themselves are starting to talk here, and I'm starting to see a change in their attitude. A bit of an inward struggle, because you have a few of them that are still on board with government mandates, and the actual general population of some of these reserves are really starting to put some hard questions forward. So I am seeing a change there. I'm seeing a change in people's general attitude, where they know that something is really, really messed up, but they don't know what to do about it. There's more power than people actually realize they have. Is we have incredible power. And if we put it to work, we could put this thing to a stop. I'm hoping for the future. Right now, I have my days that I'm kind of wondering if we are going to be able to work our way around this. But I'm going to share your attitude there, Jürgen, that good people will eventually rise and we will put a stop to this. We have no choice. We actually have no choice right now.
Yeah, period. That's right. We have none, Barry. And you know what? I think if we, the more we send out positive vibes, the more positive action will happen. I truly believe that. I think if you get out of the third dimension and go into a new level of awareness, which I think a lot of humanity is, they're coming out of a sleep. Every single day there are people waking up. Now, you know, and those are people that have already been counted as sleepers. So in my mind, we're turning a corner. It is happening. It's happening slower than we hoped, but it is happening. And you can see it because the left is starting to devour itself on a greater scale. They have no more moves. You can see it. It's like they might have a couple more moves left on the chessboard, and then it's going to be checkmate. I really think so. Whether it's because of this COVID, whether it's because of economics, I think economics are going to do them in. If you look at gas prices, how long are people going to take it, especially in the States? With gas prices the way they are there, they're gonna rise up pretty quick if they go up any higher. I know in Canada we'll just sit back and take it. We always do. We've kind of given up that sort of energy file to Ottawa, and whatever they do is okay because it's all about climate change. They have the masses convinced that we need massive carbon taxes. So I don't think Canada will progress in any sense. When I talk to people and I tell them that in 2015, Justin Trudeau, the first thing he said after he was elected was that welcome to the world's first post-national state. And I kept harping on that for months and months afterwards, and nobody said a word about it. Nobody asked, nobody questioned about it. Nobody said anything. People that voted for him never questioned it. They never said anything. And so you wonder, like, this country is hypnotized. It's hypnotized. It's vaporized. We've been methodically programmed to such a degree that I think Canada is almost impossible to turn around. I really do.
Well, I hope not, Jürgen. I hope that there's still enough Canadians that have a little bit of intestinal fortitude will start to recognize what we're up against, and will rise in enough of a number to stop this. But some days I have my doubts. I really do. How bad is it going to have to get? How much more of our freedoms are they going to take away from us before people realize that we're in a war? Like I said, I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to say, hey, for the sake of my grandchildren, we're going to win this. If we don't, Jürgen, then we can at least say to ourselves that we did everything that we could possibly do to stop this. We'll be able to look in the mirror and say that to ourselves. But I'm in fear right now for the future of my country. I'm terrified of what I see coming. And I just hope it gets through to Canadians that we really need to stand together right now, put our differences aside, whatever they are, and unify under one united cause. And that, of course, is protecting what we have. We have the greatest country in the world, and we're going to lose it if this keeps going, my friend. And I don't want to say that, but that's the truth. If it keeps going, we will lose it. But we're going to stop it, Jürgen. I'm going to have to remain optimistic here. I can't give up. I can't quit.
Yeah, no, I same here, Barry. You know, I'll quit when I'm dead, I guess. I've tried many times along the way. I've said to my kids, my wife, I'm going to stop. Like, yeah, I can't. And some of us, it's in our blood. We just can't do it. There's no way. I have too much information that needs to get out there, and a way of expressing it that I think people take to. So I need to do my job. I feel it's my job in life to help educate Canadians specifically. I went to my doctor this past week, and you're going to be shocked to hear this, but my doctor looked at me and he said, what do you think is really happening? It just blew me away, Barry. It freaking blew me away. What do you think is really happening? And then he started telling me how he was so proud of this country when he came here as a South African 20 years ago, and how now he's lost all that pride. And so I had to give him a brief history lesson on Canada, and I told him things that he was not aware of, and I totally shocked him to the point where he is now. I have a doctor that I think would basically do anything I want to do. It was so heartfelt. I couldn't believe it came from him. Like, he was just, I need to know, what do you think is really going on? So one of the things I told him was, you need to be aware of what happened in 1976. It's one of those things in history, in Canadian history, that is totally underplayed. But I've mentioned it several times over the years since I was with the Human Rights Institute of Canada under Dr. Marguerite Ritchie. And that was Pierre Trudeau passing 3,240, I think it was. Don't quote me on that number. I know it was over 3,000 orders in council in 1976 as a giant middle finger to the 200-year anniversary of the American Constitution. And nobody said anything about it. There was no media. There was no – I know Dr. Ritchie and I used to have conversations about that and how slick – Trudeau was in playing the game with Levesque, you know, the good cop, bad cop, we're going to break up and I'm going to save Canada. The one guy's going to break up the country, the other guy's going to save the country. And Canadians fell right into their freaking game like a bunch of babies. It was incredible to watch. It was disgusting, actually, because, you know, I had visions of Levesque, Maurice Strong, Pierre Trudeau, Paul Martin, all of them sitting in an office and planning the complete game of separation with the Canadian people as a way to get more money, as to bleed more Canadians and make sure that the Laurentian elite are constantly fed with their victimization. So, you know, when you look at that, the history of this country, when I told him that he had passed those 3,000 orders in council, which basically were like executive orders, which transferred all the power from the House of Commons basically into the Prime Minister's office. And that forever changed the look of how politics happened in Canada. That happened in 1976. And all of those 3,000 orders in council were never ratified. And not one single leader of this country has ever, ever replaced them, taken them off the books, got rid of them, and given the power back to the House of Commons, to the people where it belongs. And we're telling them that and some other stories about, how the Trudeaus treat people, how they walk around like kings and queens. They never apologize. They never say please. They never say thank you to the people that serve them. They're as arrogant as Marie Antoinette ever was.
So, well, Trudeau gave us a new national holiday, and then he flew to Tofino to go surfing.
Perfect.
What more do you need to know about this guy, folk? What do you think? What are your thoughts right now? Did you talk to your doctor about these jabs at all? Did you guys get into that conversation?
We got into that the last time I saw him, and I told him point blank I'm never taking it. And he told me that he took it because of his job. He had to. And I said, you should have fought it. You're a doctor. You know better. And he just kind of looked at me.
Well, you think, Jürgen, you think the last person that would take this without looking into it would be a doctor, especially with the information that's out there right now, all the doctors that are standing against us around the world. You don't have to go on the internet for very long to find out that there's literally thousands and thousands of doctors now screaming at the top of their lungs about this whole scam, yet we hear nothing about that on mainstream media. The Great Barrington Declaration, you hear nothing. You hear nothing about all the organizations that are now starting to form, the unions, the firefighters, the police in Canada that are rallying together and standing as a unified voice telling the government to go pound sand. You hear nothing about that, but that's happening right now in our country, Jürgen. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah.
Especially in Alberta. There's some real big pushback. I mean, you guys are, that Jason Kennedy, he's just a nutcase, Jürgen. Don't you love that guy? What a piece of work he is. It's unbelievable what comes out of that mouth of that man after what he's said to Albertans in the past. Let's talk about him for a few minutes. What do you think about your great leader?
I think he's the epitome of the sodomite that was talked about in the Bible. I think he's a traitorous, lecherous deceiver. I think he hooked onto a federal post back in the day, seeing himself as a future prime minister of this country. And for the life of me, I do not understand how this guy became the premier of this province, other than the fact that the media heralded him as some kind of savior. And they do it all the time with these liars and deceivers. And it's come to the point, we don't talk about it, but we have to. We have to get the sodomites out of charge. I'm sorry, I have to say it. I have to say it. We have to get back to family value leadership. We have to get back to people who cherish a mother and father and a family unit, because that's a strong unit that builds strong civilizations and strong societies. Mm-hmm. We cannot lean into this gender equality BS that they're feasting us on daily, 24/7. To make us believe that men are bad. And now you've got movies for the last 10 years where this 100-pound woman takes on a 250-pound guy and beats the crap out of him.
Mm-hmm.
It's all such BS, and it's right in your face. It has to stop. We have to stand up to this. Number one, let's stop watching Hollywood movies, okay? Let's stop it. Let's stop giving them a nickel of our money. Number two, how about canceling Netflix? That money you give Netflix feeds the pedophiles, and it feeds these people that are showing movies with 10-year-old girls barely wearing any clothes. Yep. And that's okay with Netflix. You're feeding Barack Obama and his tranny wife, okay? That's who you're feeding if you're buying Netflix. Get out of it. I'm sorry, Barry.
Oh, you're hitting the nail right on the head, man. I mean, Michael and Brock, they made the perfect couple, and they just laughed the whole time they were in there. They're just laughing at the public. Here I've got a tranny wife. Well, of course, him being a homosexual himself, it was the perfect couple. I mean, it couldn't be better if they planned it out and they just laughed at the public. It's a joke what's gone on in upper levels of government in the last 10 years. But like you said, Jürgen, it's all pedophiles and sodomites that are running our world.
Pedophiles and sodomites.
Yep. It's so true. It is so true, folks.
And, dictating policy.
I mean, just look. Go look at the Bohemian Grove, folks. Go look at what goes on there and tell me that is the kind of people that you would want running this world. People don't think that's real, Jürgen, but it's very real. And what they do at Bohemian Grove, the process and the rituals they go through are right from the pits of hell, my friend. And these are leaders of our world that participate this on a yearly basis. You got to go look into that, folks. Alex Jones wasn't a nutcase when he exposed it. Go ahead, Jürgen.
Well, and having been in the entertainment business, let me tell you something, Barry. There's some very, very strange stuff that goes on. And I could tell you some stories that I was told that are unfit for the air. I couldn't tell you on the air because it's so gross. And these are these people. And the things they do in their spare time, I mean, it turn your stomach. It really turn your stomach. So, you know, we've allowed this to happen because good people do nothing. They sit on the couch. They do not. They think somebody else is going to be there for them. I know when I was advocating for Canadians for Language Fairness, and I was trying to tell all the English speakers around me in Ottawa that they're all going to be losing their jobs because of this push for bilingualism is favoring French speakers first. Everybody laughed at me, and nobody would give me the time of day. But then what happened in the Ottawa area? If you don't speak French first, you don't get a job in anything, not McDonald's, not anywhere. You cannot get a job as an English-speaking person in the Ottawa area, period. And it goes all the way to Kingston. It's basically like if you took the map of Canada now and really drew the borderline, the province of Quebec would extend into Ottawa and down near Kingston and take half of Ontario with it. And it would also take basically the Atlantic provinces outside of a few red zones. That would be Quebec now, because New Brunswick is an appendage of Quebec. Eastern Ontario is an appendage of Quebec. And Quebec language laws are all over that area with no pushback from any English speakers whatsoever. That's the nature of our country. That's my expertise, because I've been fighting that battle basically my whole life because I grew up in it. I watched it. With businesses and everything that I had in the French parts of Ottawa, in the English-speaking parts of Ottawa, the government contracts that I had, listening to French speakers, understanding French and listening to their hatred of anybody who spoke English behind closed doors, you could hear them. You know, I would fake knowing, understanding French and listening to people while I was doing a job, and they would be angry because the French guy didn't get this contract. I got it. And I would hear them talk about it. The monde anglais, la position. You could hear it. And I would be thinking to myself underneath my breath, these people really have a hate on for me. Why? Because I won this contract? I won this contract because I do a better job.
I didn't know that.
There's an underlying hatred in this country that people don't even understand or talk about. It's deeply rooted, my friend, very deeply rooted. My neighbor even told me that when I moved in south of Ottawa into a predominantly Francophone neighborhood. He came to me the day I moved in and said, you weren't supposed to live here. Only French people are supposed to live here.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, the welcoming committee, eh?
Yes. He came to my door the day I moved in. You weren't supposed to buy this house, Mon G.
Wow.
His friend was supposed to buy it. I said, well, your friend must have been asleep because I just bought it. Thanks. And I put my hand out. I said, my name's Jürgen Vollrath. What's your name? And he turned around and walked away.
How do we correct it, Jürgen?
That's what it's like in that area. There are some people. I used to go to stores in Amberin, and there were some stores. The minute you walked in, you could see the hatred on their face. You didn't even have to say a word. They knew you weren't part of their French clique, so they automatically had to hate you. Yeah. And so, so you look at where this country's at, Barry. The last two federal elections, right? We had three debates. In the last two federal elections, so that altogether that six debates, out of six debates, four of them held in the language of French in the province of Quebec. Two out of six in English-speaking Canada in English. Where are we in this country? The nation of Quebec is running the country of Canada. That's what's happening. And the nation of Quebec gets preferred nation status from the United Nations because it was born there. They're allowed to be nationalistic. They're allowed to have certain rules that the rest of this country isn't allowed to have. Pierre Trudeau made sure of that, and René Lévesque made sure of that. They made sure that their province gets $6 or $7 a day daycare while Alberta pays for it through equalization payments. Saskatchewan, Alberta, British Columbia are colonies of the Laurentian elite. We are the colonized. That's what I call Western Canada, the colonized. We've been colonized ever since this country was formed. They take our resources and then spit in our face. That's what they do, the Laurentian elite. They like that. They like the power. They like the control. You look at what's happened in the coal industry. Who's one of the biggest shippers of coal in the world? It's Paul Martin and his shipping company, coal from Canada that goes to China, but we're not allowed to use coal.
Yeah, China is building how many new coal-fired generators in their country right now? There was an article on that the other day that I was reading. You're going to think it's 37 new coal-fired generators are being built in China as we speak. So here we are shipping them coal and charging Canadians carbon tax on the carbon that's being produced in China. Because we sure ain't producing it, buddy. We're carbon neutral. We're actually beyond carbon neutral. We absorb more carbon than we produce. And yet we are being taxed for carbon tax now. None of that money is going to fight the environment. You know that. You're going to help Trudeau pay for all of the commitments he's made overseas to his buddies. It's a joke. It really is. It's got to change. It does. I'm looking for answers, Jürgen. A lot of Canadians are looking for answers. We've got to come up with solutions to these problems because it's not going to change. It's not going to get any better. It's just going to get worse. So we need solutions. So what are the solutions, my friend? What can Canadians actually do to get involved in changing our country? Well, that's a loaded question. That's a loaded question, but I'm going to put it to you.
It's a loaded question, and I think there's a lot of different answers. But I think the first answer would be, we need to take this personally because it is personal. We don't. We don't take it personally. We take it as a group. We think they're doing it to us as a group. No, they're doing it to us personally. So if you take it personally, then you go to the person who's doing it to you. And who's the person doing it to you? Well, the first person doing it to you is the lying media. So you have to go to your local media, and you got to go and you got to confront them and say, what are you doing to me? You are lying to me by working for these globalist scumbags that are destroying my life. Why are you doing that? Make it personal for them. It's time. We have no more time. We can't go to these protests anymore, stand on the corner with our sign saying, this has to stop, stop Trudeau. We've been doing that for years. I was in 2017, the biggest sign you've ever seen, stop Trudeau. It was me holding that sign up on Parliament Hill that's still circulating these days. Stop Trudeau. That was in 2007. This is 4 years later. The signs haven't worked. We need to make it personal. They've made it personal because they're stealing our livelihood. Mm. It's not a group thing anymore. They're doing it to your family. They're breaking up your family. They're stealing your job. They're stealing your money. They're making you dependent on them. So when are you going to say enough is enough and stand up and say, this is personal? I'm going to the guy who's doing this to me, and the first guy doing it to me is that reporter who's lying to me. Once we get the reporters on our side to do a good job, they can climb up the ladder, and let's get the real people that are doing, that are pulling the strings and issuing the orders for this, right?
Yeah, well, to get the media.
Look at the wealth of Doug Ford, what he's accumulated since he's come into power. Look at the wealth of the Clintons and Obamas and all these people that go into
Trudeau Foundation, blah, blah, blah.
Good grief. It's enough to make you sick while children starve. Are you kidding me? And the headlines are all about cases and not about missing children? What? Have we lost our minds, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, I'm sorry. We can't use that term anymore. That's one of the things we've lost. The fact that there were ladies and there were gentlemen. They were the gentlemen, just as a gentle reminder to society, the gentlemen were all A. They were all, they weren't beta males. They were They were the wolves. They were the A males. They were the ones that were in charge, and they were gentlemen. They knew how to treat a lady. That's what it was, and that's what it is, and that's what it should always be, because there is a distinction. Men are men, and women are women. And for anyone to tell you that a man's going to give birth and watching a picture of Pete Buttigieg breastfeed his child with these fake boobs that he's wearing is enough to make you puke. And if you can't see that, then you should get off this planet. We got no room for you anymore.
How can I add to that, Jürgen? Well, no, you're spot on, buddy. You know, it is time to call it like it is, Jürgen. We can't be sugarcoating anything more at this point in history. We got to tell people exactly like it is. And what you're saying right now, if that's hurting people's feelings, well, I'm sorry. We've got a box of Kleenex and we'll send you one. But it's absolutely important right now that we take the gloves off and really call these guys. Yeah, I've got Kleenexes right here, folks. Just message me and I'll send you one. But, you know, it's really important right now that we call it like it is, because people in Canada need to be slapped awake. I'm not going to give up on Canadians. I still believe that the blood of our forefathers is coursing through our veins. All we have to do is get the Canadian male awake and aware, and more so the Canadian female mother. You know, if we could rise, get the mother bears awake and get them involved in stopping what's going on in this country, that would be an unstoppable force, Jürgen. But unfortunately, we're not seeing that yet. And I kind of wonder why. I really do. Are we that far gone? I don't have the answer to that question. But I know if that parents rose and put a stop to this, it would stop overnight. Go ahead.
We are that far gone, because now you're getting served a paper straw in a plastic cup.
Yeah, and saving the environment.
You know, I mean, honest to God, that's what it is. I wanted to ask you something just as a curiosity. Do you know if UK websites use biscuits or cookies?
I don't have an answer for that one, Jürgen.
They probably use biscuits, right? I say it's time for biscuits on my computer. It's asking me for biscuits. Anyways, I took my dog named Shark to the beach, and that was a big mistake.
Yeah, Shark! Well, hey, some of the stuff you send me, I share it around, and it does have a positive effect on people, because we do need to laugh a little bit right now, Jürgen, or we will lose our insanity. We will. Because things are just getting, it used to be the old saying, things are getting crazier by the day. Well, that's been thrown out the window now, and things are getting crazier by the hour. Soon to be crazier by the minute. And they're going to come really hard at us in the next little while, Jürgen, because I believe they see the shift coming in society where people are really starting to catch on to their scam. So henceforth, they're really going to push this hard on us in the next couple of months. You'll see new restrictions put in all the time, that there will be a booster that's mandatory to keep your vaccine passport legitimate. More variants will come out. Of course, those variants will be now blamed on the unvaccinated, because we can separate that sector in society. They'll turn the vax against the unvax. They turn the maskers against the unmaskers. They have got so many methods of division that they're employing that people don't see, Jürgen, but they know exactly what they're doing and how they're dividing our society. You know, a divided society is a society that's very easy to conquer. And in the same mouthful, a society that has lost its family units. And any time in history you look at history and study it, you'll find out that any society that has lost the moral fiber and their family units have fallen apart, that society has fallen apart. And that's exactly what's going to happen in Canada if we don't turn this around. My thoughts, go ahead.
Well, you're exactly right. And the way they're manipulating and manufacturing our society through these foundations and through the Fabian Society, the London School of Economics, we're being controlled in a way that, like I put up on post many times now, if you haven't studied Fabian socialism, then get out of the conversation, because you really don't understand what these people are doing to us and how sly they've been. And it goes to, I think I did this on the last program, but maybe I could do it over again. The Ten Commandments of the Great Reset. Can I say that over again?
You can fly away.
The Ten Commandments of the Great Reset. Just so everyone knows, they're reshaping our society, and this is what they want. Number one, thou shalt own nothing and be happy. Number two, thou shalt surrender your children. Number three, thou shalt kneel only before the government and Moloch. Number four, thou shalt forfeit all individual rights. Number five, thou shalt be monitored 24/7 and enjoy it. Number six, thou shalt never complain. Number seven, thou shalt follow our dietary guidelines only. Number eight, thou shalt regularly receive injection upgrades. Number nine, thou shalt share amenities in a communal pod. And number 10, thou shalt willingly forfeit life at the age of 75 and be glad to do it.
Wow, that means I only got 8 years. I only got 8 years then.
Yeah, I got three.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How close, everything you just said, Jürgen, how close are we to that right now, folks? Think about that for a second. Well, yeah, exactly. It's all being played in front of our face right now. People got to wake up to this, Jürgen. I ask myself every day why people can't see the trees for the forest. We got to remember, too, that people have been brainwashed and indoctrinated right from the time they were born. And it's really, really hard for them to step outside of their bubble. It terrifies them. That's one of the problems that we're dealing with in society right now. Is you said earlier in the show that you can get older people that are absolutely hell-bent on believing that the CBC and global is what's really going on in our world, and they follow the directives to the T. Until we can change that, until we can get people going to alternatives and looking at information they should be looking at, we have a big problem. But like I said, in the same mouthful, Jürgen, I am seeing that change now. So we'll just keep my foot to the floor. I know you're going to keep your foot to the floor, and what happens, happens, buddy. But like I said, we'll at least be able to say to ourselves, however this turns out down the road here, however this ends up, that at least we did what we could. And nobody will take that away from us, buddy.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you can go to the grave with pride, knowing that you work your butt off trying to save your children and grandchildren. I'm living in Alberta. I'm watching the morale of all these men that go out in the fields. And I was just at a little Halloween get together yesterday, and the men and the women that the Easterners don't understand what this life is, that a man goes out for 15 days and comes home for six, and he's got a family, and the children miss him, and the wife misses him, and the wife has to carry on for 15 days without her man. I mean, if you think back to the days of pioneer life, this is very similar. It's a very hard, hard life. These men sleep in hotel rooms every night. They don't get to sleep in their own bed, and they have like 12 to 14 hours a day. And of course, people are going to say, yeah, but they make the money. Okay, that's fine. I'm just saying it is a hard life, and the money is well deserved because of the nature of the hard life. You can't do that forever. There's very few men that are going to be doing that for a lifetime and not suffer very physical consequences, especially going from a day shift to a night shift every second shift. So you're on days for 15 days. You get to enjoy your family for 6 days. Then you go on nights. You come back. It takes you 2-3 days just to acclimatize. Then you're back on days again on another shift. So it's a very, very difficult life. And now it's like with this COVID thing, one man gets sick and the whole crew gets shut down. They send entire crews home. You wonder why your gas prices are going up. I mean, they've got these men out there that are working in plus 40 and minus 40, battling the elements. And because one guy gets the sniffles, they're going to shut the whole thing down, and your heating price is going to go through the roof because of it. Are you kidding me? Mm. Stop treating these men like they're pussies, because they're not. These are hardcore men that are out there fighting hard to make sure that we have heat in our home. And they're being treated like these criminals out there if a guy gets the sniffles. It's absolutely beyond belief. And the morale is beyond belief. It's to the point where it's time that everybody should stand up, write a damn letter, and start protecting these men. Because if we lose them and we lose our heat, we're cooked in this country.
I agree. These vaccine passports are just another major step downwards if we allow this to go on. That we will be under the boot of medical tyranny for the rest of our lives, that this level of control that they're establishing over society we will never get back unless we stand against it. They're not going to give it back. Once they've got it, they don't give it back. And they just continually take freedoms away under the guise of keeping you safe. Keep you safe. Keep you safe. Every time Trudeau opens his mouth, we're doing this to keep you safe, folks. Well, if you give up your freedoms for a little bit of safety, you deserve neither, Jürgen. And never was a truer saying true.
Yeah. Why did Trudeau build a bunker, right?
Yeah, why is it I keep hearing about camps being built in Canada, and some of them have been videoed and documented? Why did the Canadian government, this came to me now, you know, I'm trying to find out if it's absolute truth, so I'm going to stay on the skeptical side right now, Jürgen, but yeah. I had documents sent to me that apparently came from the Canadian government asking for quotes on guillotines. Now, I don't know if you saw this or not, but apparently yeah. It's legitimate. And if it is, then why would the government be wanting guillotines? You're going to, I mean, what are they going to do? Start cutting heads off chickens or something? I don't know. But I'm not going to speculate on that, but I did see something like that come across. I shouldn't even actually be talking about that because it's speculation right now. But nothing is, in my world right now, nothing is out of the realm of possibility with a government that is hell-bent on taking over this country with full-blown communism. We are getting very, very close to that, folks. And if it keeps going, the window's going to close, Jürgen. It will. We're not going to let that happen, my friend. We're going to do everything we can to stop it because it's absolutely the most important things in our life right now is to stop this madness.
Well, and it's funny you talked about the guillotines, but in the States they did. They had a whole bunch of them the government ordered. I saw that story maybe last year.
Yeah, I saw that story too. It lends lots of thought to this possible situation, because you know that Joe Biden and Justin Trudeau are buddy buddies, man.
Oh yeah,
I mean they're just licking their lips right now because they've got
and control. Governments are working in tandem with giant corporations to bankrupt their own people. They're printing money for nothing. You look at Trudeau, $600 million wasted on election to have another in 18 months. You know what I think he did? I think he put a feeler out with this election to see if people would still vote for him based on all his ethics violations and all the crap he's done to this country. And he found out that people are still going to vote for him. Or he found out that the systems for voting are still working in his favor, right? Yeah, and so he exactly. found that out. So he's found out that in 18 months, he's going to have another million or two foreigners that he's let into this country that are promised to vote for him, that'll put him over the top, will give him the majority in 18 months, and then we'll never have another election again.
That'll be the end of it, Jürgen. And he's getting close. You know, he's displacing the population in the country. In the very near future, we will be a minority. If you look at where the people coming into this country are coming from, the geographics in the world where these people are coming from, the nations that are involved in radical Islam that are bringing thousands of people into our country right now, you think that's just by chance, folks? Why are we not seeing refugees from legitimate places, like maybe like South Africa, you know? Where Christians are being slaughtered, and you're not hearing a word about it on the mainstream. We got a big problem here, Jürgen, but you know I'm not going to give up, buddy. I have to stay optimistic. If I gave up, I would just quit doing what I'm doing right now and go look after my own. But I can't give up, my friend. I got to stay positive. We're going to win this, Jürgen. That's all I can say is we're going to win it, buddy. We can't lose.
If I wanted to control the world, number one, I would first alienate any opposition to any narrative that I have from society. Number two, I would take control of social media through fact checkers. Number three, I would control people's movements and actions. Number four, I would convince them that it was all for the greater good. Number five, I would create and constantly highlight divisions amongst society. Number six, I would point to others at my own malfeasance. Number seven, I would place agents of deception throughout society. Number eight, I would control the availability to entertainment. Number nine, I would control food production and distribution. And number 10, I would control healthcare and keep health cures to only those in my circle. That's what I would do if I wanted to control the world. And I look around, and it seems to me that some people are doing that.
I think you probably just hit the nail on the head again, Jürgen, that what you just said is exactly what's going on in our society right now. Like I said, I'm going to say it again. I just hope that there's enough Canadian men out there that really start to realize that this is a life and death struggle, that there will be no tomorrow if we let this go on, and that they'll rise up and join us in stopping this, because that's all it's going to take. If we rose up as a nation tomorrow and said we've had enough of this, it would come to stop overnight. But it's going to take people willing to sacrifice for us to do that.
Yeah.
So, Jürgen, we're down to the last couple minutes here, buddy. This hour has gone very quickly. It always does when we get talking. I want to thank you for coming in today and sharing your thoughts. And I'm going to let you have a last thought here for a minute or so before I have to say goodbye to you again, my friend.
Well, thanks a lot for having me again, Barry. It's always enjoyable to have a chat with you. And, yeah, we've gone down this road for a few years now, you and I, with these regular convos. We've seen this coming where others have not. We've been ridiculed and laughed at, and others are now starting to come around, and that makes my heart warm. I get tremendous joy in seeing my grandkids, and I know you do too. And I think if we carry on with strong feelings of love for one another, if we carry on with the knowledge that mankind is generally good and that goodness will rise to the top, and that all of those evil people will have their comeuppance. Karma has a way of coming around, folks. And I think, you know, Nuremberg 2.0 is not far away. We're going to see a lot of people going down. I think you're going to see a lot more activity in October. These election results in the United States are going to come out. Everything else is a distraction from the stolen election. We know that. There can be no other elections until that one is clarified in the United States. Otherwise, all further elections will be nullified anyways. They're all useless. They're all stolen. So I believe that things are going to come out in the next few weeks. They're going to blow people's minds. You're already starting to see things that were never out there before. I think the mainstream is going to have to cough up. They're going to have to.
And that being said, Jürgen, we are going to win this because you're absolutely correct about what's going on in the United States of America right now. I believe we're going to see that election decertified. Yeah. I believe that the audits will be performed in these states, and the American people will realize just how badly they were robbed in this last election, and the House of Cards will come falling down. We can only hope for that kind of result. Nothing else is going to work right now, Jürgen. That the United States of America is the only last beacon of hope in the world. And if that country continues to go on the path they are right now, then we're all in a big pile of poop, my friend. So thanks again for coming in, Jürgen. Always great talking with you. And I hope you'll oblige me again in the near future and join me again.
Absolutely, Barry. Thanks for having me. Ciao for now.
Okay. Bye, Jürgen. Okay. Well, folks, that's been a good 3 hours. It's gone by very quickly. Thanks for bearing with me with my kind of raspy voice today. Managed to work my way through this, and we'll be back next week, same time, same place. Got some good guests coming in next week. You guys all have a great week, and God bless you, and bye for now.